among tears and cheers. At last, the hostages were released. President Trump addressed the Knesset.
What will soon be a truly magnificent region, I believe that so strongly. This is the historic dawn of a new Middle East.
Sentiments echoed by Prime Minister of Israel, Benjamin Netanyahu.
A time for peace and a time for war. The last 2 years have been a time of war. The coming years will hopefully be a time for peace.
But now the hard work begins, and how difficult might it be to ensure that President Trump stays focused? He's already talking about moving on to the Ukraine conflict. Coming back to the UK, 6 in 10 parents do not believe their children need to be toilet trained before starting school. Brighton head teacher Sarah is, understandably, frustrated.
Don't think schools have capacity to deal and take responsibility for children's toilet training. I think that is a parent's responsibility.
7 o'clock news on LBC is next.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 7 o'clock, the United Nations has warned of the need to surge more humanitarian aid into Gaza. It follows the exchange of Israeli hostages and Palestinian detainees in the first phase of Donald Trump's peace plan. World leaders have been meeting in Egypt to discuss the next stage of the process. Sir Keir Starmer says Britain could play a role in monitoring the ceasefire.
The question today has already moved to how do we implement, how do we make sure this moves forward? It's really important that we keep that focus. We mustn't have any missteps now.
He's also suggested the experience of Northern Ireland could be used in decommissioning the capability of Hamas. Britain's cyber security agency has warned Chinese and Russian hackers are behind a record number of serious online attacks. The National Cyber Security Centre recorded a 50% increase in highly significant incidents in the last year. Senior Conservatives have asked prosecutors if a high-profile Chinese spying trial could be resurrected. The trial of two men who denied the charges collapsed because evidence labelling Beijing a security threat couldn't be obtained. Ministers have dismissed claims the government deliberately collapsed the trial as baseless. More than 12,000 terminally ill patients in England are at risk of losing access to hospice care. Figures shared with LBC show 40% of hospices are looking at reducing or stopping services without more funding in the next 6 months. Alison Bennett is the Liberal Democrats' care spokesperson.
There is this awful postcode lottery. There's rising costs. Government support hasn't kept pace with it. And beds and staff are closing or being let go. And that means that people are not having the dignified death. They're not having the best possible care they can.
The Department of Health says it's investing a record £100 million in improving hospice facilities. Wales and Northern Ireland both suffered losses in World Cup qualifying last night. Craig Bellamy's side lost 4-2 to Belgium in Cardiff, and Northern Ireland were beaten 1-0 by Germany in Belfast. England would secure their place at the tournament with a win over Latvia tonight. In the city, the FTSE 100 will reopen this morning at 94.42 after closing up 15 yesterday. The pound buys $1.33 and a euro 15. LBC weather quite cloudy today with light rain for many places. A bit brighter in central Scotland, though, a high of 17 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watts.
I'm here with Charlie Bigham, and there is a lovely hint of spice in the air.
It's my chicken tikka masala. I start by browning the onions with garlic and ginger, then add hand-selected spices and tender yogurt-marinated chicken.
Smells amazing. I'm getting cumin, coriander, turmeric.
Yes, and a little fenugreek. Then I finish the rich masala sauce with mango chutney and nigella seeds. Cheers.
We should do curry night every week.
Only if you learn to cook.
Charlie Bigham's.
Handmade in my kitchen. Cooked in yours.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning, 4 minutes after seven, Tuesday, October the 14th. It truly was a day of history yesterday, and you saw it play out as the hostages and their families ended 2 years of torment. Here's one, 23-year-old Bar Cooperstein reunited with mother Julie. And like him or loathe him, a lot of it was down to one man, President Trump, After being in Israel, after addressing the Knesset, it was off to Egypt, where he was with 20 world leaders yesterday afternoon, and he had this to say about some of them.
I've known so many of you for so long. You're friends of mine. You're great people. I have a couple I don't like in particular, but I won't tell you who. I have actually a few of them I don't like at all.
One of those might be Emmanuel Macron. We've had a body language expert study the videotape, also done a little bit of lip reading, and we'll share as much of that with you as we can, as we're confident to tell you. Let's come back home for stories in the UK. And the concern, the possibility the health service could offer targeted prostate cancer checks, costing just £18 a patient. Amy Rylance is with Prostate Cancer UK.
The screening programme is only ever as good as the people who attend, and it's really encouraging to see that over three quarters of men would attend a screening.
And I'll be arguing why many parents should hold their heads in shame. How have so many of you lost the art to parent? As it is revealed, a shocking survey says 6 in 10 say it's fine for their children to start school still in their nappies. That's later in the show.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
It's the story that has, of course, dominated news bulletins and newspapers headlines around the world, and rightly so. It is an extraordinary day, a day of destiny. I take you back to yesterday morning. You may recall, of course, towards the end of our watch, we were hopeful that we might hear from the man himself, President Trump. He'd landed in Israel, and we were hoping he might address the Knesset. It was actually way, way, way behind schedule. But he did, of course, finally enter the parliament, the Israeli Knesset, to rounds of applause and a fanfare. And there was a heck of a fanfare and a parade of people highlighted and saluted for the work they've done. You heard from the Speaker, Amir Ohana, the opposition leader, Yair Lapid, Israel's Prime Minister, Benjamin Netanyahu. You might recall some 2 years ago, speaking shortly after the October 7th attacks, Mr. Netanyahu invoked from the Book of Ecclesiasticus to declare that time now was the time for war. Yesterday he read the same passage, but flipped it on its head to declare...
To everything there is a season, and a time for every matter under heaven. Et milchama ve'et shalom. A time for peace and a time for war. The last 2 years have been a time of war. The coming years will hopefully be a time for peace.
Finally, after a wait, and quite a long wait, it was President Trump's turn to speak. And he said this moment would be a historic dawn for the region.
Today the skies are calm, the guns are silent, the sirens are still, and the sun rises on a holy land that is finally at peace, a land and a region that will live, God willing, in peace for all eternity. This is the end of an age of terror and death, and the beginning of the age of faith and hope and of God. It's the start of a grand concord and lasting harmony for Israel and all the nations of what will soon be a truly magnificent region. I believe that so strongly. This is the historic dawn of a new Middle East.
Then it was back to Air Force One for the flight to the Egyptian resort of Sharm el-Sheikh, a little under an hour, as I recall. Attend a gathering of more than 20 world leaders to discuss the future of the region and sign a document cementing the deal. The president kept the world leaders, including our Prime Minister Sir Keir Starmer, waiting for several hours as he was running way behind schedule, and then made this swipe at some of them.
I've known so many of you for so long. You're friends of mine. You're great people. I have a couple I don't like in particular, but I won't tell you who. I have actually a few of them I don't like at all, but you'll never find out who they are. Well, maybe you will, come to think of it. But I have most of you who I like a lot, and I respect a lot. Maybe that's more important.
They just had to stand there smiling inanely because they knew who was absolutely front of stage. Now, There'd been 2 years, of course, in captivity in Hamas. The 20 living hostages were released. There's still a degree of tension over the remains of, sadly, those who lost their lives. Some were taken from that Nova Music Festival, others from their homes on the kibbutz. Emotional scenes played out on media around the world as they reunited with their friends and their families.
This is CNN Breaking News.
And welcome back to CNN's Breaking News coverage. For the first time in 2 years, over 2 years, 738 days, Hamas holds no living hostages in its captivity.
A day of jubilation, hugs, tears and sheer relief as the 20 living hostages held by Hamas are released from captivity, families nervously watching on TV. Each with their own individual story, like 23-year-old Bar Cooperstein. His mother last saw him before he started work as a security guard at the Nova Music Festival. His father, Tal, who's not been on his feet for 5 years after a stroke following a car crash, was helped to stand to embrace his son. Hostages previously released say that 22-year-old Matan Angarest, who was freed yesterday, was badly hurt by Hamas during violent interrogations. Elsewhere, one of the organisers behind the Nova Music Festival, the site where 347 people were murdered on October the 7th, is Elkana Bobot, reunited with his wife and five-year-old son.
I am silly.
Then there's Evatar David among the 20. Who was videoed being forced to dig his own grave by Hamas, appearing skeletal and emaciated. Now back with friends. And then there's Noah Argamani. Her plight often chronicled in the British press.
I was kidnapped by Hamas terrorists on October 7 from the Nova Music Festival with my partner, Avinatan Or.
But released last year, and yesterday reunited with her partner, Avinatan Or.
Extraordinary emotion, Henry Riley reporting. Let's turn first to Sharon Haskell, who's Deputy Minister of Foreign Affairs, the State of Israel, and watched President Trump's address inside the Knesset. Thank you for coming on, Deputy Minister. A lot of our commentators agree the challenge now is to ensure that President Trump stays focused on what happens next in the region. How important is that in your view? Good morning to you.
Good morning. This is extremely important for us. Every time Israel had a path through peace, through diplomacy, to achieve the goals, which were very clear from the start, the return of the hostages and dismantling Hamas to make sure that they cannot commit the 7th of October again and again and again. And every time we had a diplomacy path, we always chose diplomacy. It was only when we were left with no other choice that we had to go with a military campaign. We accepted Trump's deal entirely. First stage, second stage, everything together. But not just Israel and the Americans. This was accepted also by Arab countries, including Qatar and Turkey and Egypt and Jordan and even the Palestinian Authority. But unfortunately, we are not dealing with a sensible government or, a rational leadership. This is a terrorist organization, a death cult that holds death above anything else. And so we are very worried. And the way to achieve the second stage, I believe, is a continuation of pressure on Hamas. I think that from Trump's words in the Knesset just yesterday, which were absolutely remarkable. And, we were very, very excited and happy to see and to hear these words as well. I believe he has enough guarantees and he will continue to put leverage and pressure. I think that when he's so confident in saying that, to me at least, it sounds like Qatar and Turkey are on board with him as well, where they have the actual power to force Hamas into this deal. Hamas is being hosted by both these countries. Their leadership is being hosted in luxurious hotels. They have very fat bank accounts. Those are billionaires who are in Qatar and in Turkey. And so they have enough leverage to put pressure on Hamas to continue with the second stage.
What do you think the governance of the region will look like?
Well, I think Trump sort of showed, especially yesterday as well, speaking about it in the Knesset and in Sharm el-Sheikh, about a technocratic government. It will be led by America and Egypt. I think personally that Tony Blair can be a good person to lead this project. And having the rest of the international community in this peace board, in order to create serious steps. And please, I'm not talking about slogans and about obsessions about how people want to see things work, but Trump's really talking about effective step to create peace, coexistence, and stability between Israelis and Palestinians. He talks about education. He talks about the economy. He talks about security. This is the conversation we should have had in the last 2 years. And I'm really pleased to hear now that he's got everybody on board for that.
Lastly, Deputy Minister, there's a lively debate about the role played in this by the United Kingdom, whether it was involved in anything, in fact, whether there was actually a retrograde step in recognition of the state of Palestine. Where do you stand on that?
Well, I think, you know, Marco Rubio have stated that very clearly, that the fact that the countries have declared a Palestinian state and were insinuating that they will recognize it, sabotage the very delicate negotiations that we've had 2 months ago. Trump really thought that we thought as well that we could close that deal 2 months ago. But unfortunately, with many declarations from European leaders, one after the other, it emboldened Hamas' position. And you know what? I'm pretty sure when Hamas thank you for your action, you must know you're on the wrong side of history.
Grateful for your time, Shalyn Haskell. Thank you, Deputy Minister of Foreign Affairs in Israel. And now over to you. We'll be hearing from presidential historian Dr. Laura Smith, the other side of the news for the impact on Trump. It is how you think this, an extraordinary world leader, the like of which we've never seen before. Extraordinary. But you can tell his attention, he does not fix on for a great deal of time. How will we try? How is it to be hoped that he'll ensure that he will focus on this for the necessary time to drive it to the next level? We'll look at that also after the news.
More than 30 years after a teenage girl was killed in West Yorkshire, a man's arrested on suspicion of her murder. I'm LBC's Alex Taylor-Brown with the latest.
We'll have more on that as well. 7:16 LBC News headlines, read by Thomas Watts.
Sir Keir Starmer's suggested Britain can play a role in monitoring the ceasefire in Gaza. The National Cybersecurity Centre's warned hackers from China and Russia are behind a record number of serious online attacks. And figures seen by LBC show 40% of hospices in England are looking at reducing or stopping end-of-life care because of funding shortfalls. LBC weather, a cloudy day with light rain for many places, a bit brighter in central Scotland, a high of 17 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne. We're very busy on the M1 southbound, junction 11A at Dunstable. A car's broken down and one lane is closed for recovery. Also very busy on the M25 anti-clockwise from junction 29 at the A127 to junction 28 at the A12. And that's because of an investigation. Delays on the A13 westbound to the Pitsea flyover. This is because of an accident where one lane is closed. Very busy this morning on the A2 westbound from the Danson Interchange to the Kidbrook Interchange. It's slow for about half an hour, and also the M4 eastbound onto the elevated section is slow for about half an hour. On the trains, Chiltern Railways are delayed by about 20 minutes at Rickmansworth.
This is LBC.
Hello, I'm a National Lottery scratch card. Over five people a second win with me. Ooh. That's like 30 winners since I started talking. Oh, 12 more. 14. 21!
Is there a win in store for you? Play a National Lottery scratch card today. Winners is an average search. Dream big, play small. Rules apply. Players must be 18 or over.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. LBC.
Sharing intimate photos of her without her consent.
Unwanted touching. Unwanted comments. Unwanted nudes.
Controlling what she can and can't wear.
Controlling who she can and can't see.
Threatening her.
Enough. This is abuse.
If you think it's wrong, act on it.
Call it out. Show support. Report it.
There are many ways you can safely tackle violence against women and girls. Find out how at gov.uk/enough. If someone is in danger, call 999.
The Monopoly game at McDonald's is back. There's over £2 million worth of cash prizes to be won. And a chance to get your hands on some epic prizes. Go on, it's your go. 18 plus, UK, ends 21st of October. Selected menu items, app may be required. May depend on winning moment. See mcdrules.co.uk.
Train to Worthing for scuba training. Yep, we're that family now.
Josh, flippers off until you're in the water, mate.
Well, I look ridiculous, but they're loving it.
Maddie, goggles the other way around, sweetie.
Seats found, kids happy. Heading home. Definitely bringing these wetsuits to our next beach day.
Download the Southern Railway app to book kids' tickets for £2 on off-peak journeys. Southern Railway, where every stop is a story. Terms apply. See our website for full details.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC with cybersecurity from BT. Protecting businesses of all sizes against cyber threats.
20 minutes after 7, we'll do the headlines in a moment because I want to get straight to Dr. Laura Smith, who's presidential historian at the University of Oxford, who joins me now. And let's start with a historical question, if I may, Doctor. How will history judge what President Trump helped bring about yesterday in the Middle East region? Good morning.
Good morning. That's the ultimate question, Nick. I mean, you put your finger on it before the break when you said that, you know, we'll have to see. In terms of, you mentioned a day of destiny, that's, you know, an optimistic look. And as a historian, it's hard when you look at the Middle East to be more optimistic. And so we're going to have to see in terms of substance, which is something Trump struggles with, and the attention span, as you mentioned, yeah, in terms of how well this goes in the long run.
And how is that attention to be kept focused? Because as you rightly say, Laura, he's already looking at Ukraine, then something else will attract him, and he will move on and on and on. And it does kind of need his energy, doesn't it?
Well, he's also dealing with a national government shutdown at home. So that doesn't really seem to have his attention. He's rather quite enjoying having the government shut down, but a lot of Americans aren't. You know, there was a big brouhaha recently about whether the military will be paid with the government shutdown. So the fact that he seems to be having these short-term, hopefully long-term successes with foreign policy, and yet at the same time isn't able to duly focus on increasing crises at home doesn't necessarily bode well for future long-term successes across the board.
So what is the skill set, Laura? We just celebrated 100 years since the birth of Margaret Thatcher, a very famous British Prime Minister, and she was very much her own person. She didn't actually care about her personal popularity. You could say the same of Donald Trump. You could also say of Donald Trump that he brings a sort of business-style perspective in a fashion that many previous presidents have not. So what is the skill set as you see it?
I think every president has a different skill set, but a key one is the power to persuade. And for Donald Trump, he is very focused on persuading a few key people on a few key things. He brings his experience with television and media to bear. And so for things that aren't substantive issues, he really gets that attention wherever he's looking for it. That he's very effective at. But when he's looking to persuade, for example, the Nobel Peace Prize Committee, that's not necessarily what they're looking for. And, you know, you mentioned the historical timeline here. Of course, you know, he's very much focused on getting a Nobel Peace Prize at some point. A lot of people conjecture it's because Barack Obama got one. But the Peace Prize was created in 1901, and there have been four U.S. presidents since then who have got one, including, I should mention, Jimmy Carter, who is renowned for the Camp David Accords, even though he was given his prize in 2002, a long time after he left office.
Lastly, Laura, he is an extraordinary performer in front of the camera, whether it be at an impromptu press conference, getting on or off Air Force One. How much is that a product of the TV work he did?
Oh, I think 100%. And I think something that is quite extraordinary and maybe unique to him is also his grasp and use of social media. I'm sure he has a lot of help with it, but the fact that he's managed to even strive even when other places were shutting him down and then be able to get these companies to pay him back, like YouTube, for example, for shutting him down. You know, Barack Obama just came out on a podcast saying that, you know, companies, universities should stand up, businesses should stand up to Donald Trump, and that's just not what we're seeing. So in terms of convincing people and applying applying pressure through various means, including the legal system that is supposed to be independent. It's a rocky road for everyone right now.
Thanks for your time, Dr. Laura Smith. Have a good day. You're presidential historian at the University of Oxford. 723 Ali, you'll be the first call. Let me quickly do the headlines, although you can imagine what they all are, I'm sure. Some of the newspapers go on the personal side of it. The Sun newspaper has all pictures of all 20 freed after 737 days in captivity. The Daily Mail homes in on rescued Israeli hostage Noah Agamani, enjoying a reunion kiss with her boyfriend. Noah's hero is home. The Daily Express has photographs of a number of them waving and hugging relatives. I mentioned that already Donald Trump's attention span has possibly moved on. The Daily Telegraph chronicling Trump, let's end the Ukraine war. Donald Trump preparing to arm Ukraine with long-range Tomahawk missiles as he turns his attention to trying to end the war with Russia. His attention has already moved on to the LBC app. Trump pledges to help rebuild Gaza as he hails new dawn. Let's dive into Israel and take some of the headlines there. Haaretz says its end of Gaza war could open door to major diplomatic shifts in the Middle East. Let's go to a couple of the American newspapers as well. The New York Times, a divided Israel unites in joy as hostages come home. The division they talk, of course, is the support, or some of it, down to total lack of support for Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. We might now move to a time, of course, when those elections could take place. And the Washington Post simply says, Trump eyes transformational Mideast peace. I told you they're not necessarily the greatest headline writers over in the United States. But how is his attention to be kept focused on there? He's already talking about Ukraine. And I don't say this in any way dismissively. The guy has achieved an extraordinary amount, but he does have the attention span of a teenage child. So how is he going to be kept focused? Ali and Slough, good to have you on. Ali, you're on the radio. Yes, sir, go ahead.
Good morning.
Morning, sir.
What yesterday proves is that America could have stopped this genocide 2 years ago, 18 months ago, a year ago, when Trump said the war is over, it's over. But there are two points I take from it.
I said this so many times, Ali. Didn't it take Trump to say to Hamas, effectively, take the 20-point plan, or I'm just walking away, and I'll leave you to Israel?
Well, you said it to both, to be very frank with you.
There was no 20-point plan 18 months ago, Ali.
That's detail, and that you know very well. So
no, come on. It's a bit more than detail. It's breakthrough.
But I'll tell you something. Two points that stuck out for me was the pitiful state of Keir Starmer. The greatest empire when Palestine was sold to Zionism was relegated to a footnote, and the Arab rulers were the Neville Chamberlains at Munich, throwing in the towel and surrendering Palestine. These two points stuck in my mind watching what took place at Sharm el-Sheikh yesterday. And this is the latest twist. Britain and France are the two, I think, but certainly Trump was referring to those he doesn't like, who are stopping the American rewrite of Balfour and Sykes-Picot. America's redraw in the Middle East in its own image.
Right.
That's what matters.
You thought it was, you made it clear, quite pitiful then, the way that Keir Starmer behaved yesterday.
Well, absolutely. Look, Lloyd George had Woodrow Wilson as a guest when they basically took over Palestine in the First World War, and this is the future. By the end of this century, America will be like Keir Starmer was yesterday, a footnote, and America knows that, and America is focusing its energy on protecting its interests. It doesn't care about the Europeans, and even Zionism as a means for America. It's not the end.
Lastly, is it going to hold, Ali, the peace?
To be very frank with you, Gaza at the moment is a bit like Dresden and the cities in Germany were completely bombed to the Stone Age. But you saw yesterday, the West Bank is being stolen, occupied, murdered and looted. No, it won't hold.
It won't hold. All right. Ali, thank you. If you want to challenge Ali's views, do give me a call. I know that there are so many different takes on exactly what Israel has done there, what Hamas has done there, so do get involved. How will it hold, and how do you keep President Trump's focus, laser attention to that particular region? Just coming up on 7:28, let's come to stories back home. A prisoner has been arrested in connection with the murder of a girl who vanished 30 years ago. You might famously recall the story that she'd gone out to buy some cornflakes. LBC's Yorkshire correspondent, Alex Taylor-Brown, reminds us of that story and gives us the latest developments. Morning, Alex.
Morning, Nick. Well, I'm at the Memorial Gardens here in Hebden Bridge, which is the last place that Lindsay Rymer was seen alive. That was back in November 1994 on the 7th at around 10:45 at night. She'd been to see her mum at the trades club around the corner. Black and white CCTV footage from the time shows the 13-year-old buying a box of cornflakes from the local spa shop around 20 minutes earlier. 5 months later, in April 1995, her body was found about a mile away from here in the Rochdale Canal. Her body had been weighted down and it appeared that the teenager had been strangled. The developments yesterday with West Yorkshire Police confirming they had arrested a man on suspicion of Lindsay's murder at an undisclosed prison in the UK where he's serving a sentence for other offences. We're told he's to be questioned, bailed and returned to prison whilst inquiries continue. Police have also confirmed they'll be approaching a number of specific potential witnesses, mainly in the Hebden Bridge and Halifax areas, who've been identified by the investigation. Speaking on the 30th anniversary of Lindsay's murder last November, her sisters described it as being like a horror film. Juliet Rymer was just one when Lindsay was killed.
I had a sister that I never knew who was murdered. I just can't wrap my head around that. Yeah, it's had a massive impact on me. I think more so as I've learned more about who she was and her interests and things.
And Nick, it's thought that in the years since Lindsay's murder, police have spoken to more than 5,000 people in order to try and establish what happened to her. Senior investigating officer, Detective Chief Inspector James Entwistle, has said they remain firmly committed to getting justice for Lindsay and to give her family the answers they so desperately need. But he added they do not anticipate any immediate developments at this stage, and they remain convinced there is someone out there who still has vital information, Nick.
Alex Taylor-Brown reporting from Hebden Bridge in Yorkshire. Thanks for that. Quickly feature some of the social media that's coming in. Nikki says, despite the fanfares and the music and Trump giving self-congratulatory speeches, already it's breaking down in Gaza. There's rearming and fighting in the streets. I give the ceasefire less than 2 weeks. Well, we did tell you that about that yesterday, Nikki. You're right. Sadly, there are armed militia who are in effectively open combat with Hamas, who are seeking to control the area. Andrew in Derbyshire, without fail yet again, you're looking for a reason to slag off the country you claim to love. Not slagging off the country at all. I'm just saying that the idea that in any way Britain helped achieve that peace yesterday is just fanciful nonsense. All right, coming up later in the show, the moment an Oxford student chants put Zios in the ground at a London rally and the Metropolitan Police will launch an investigation. We're going to be investigating what seems to be the collapse in house building as well. The housing secretary is going to join us later in the show. And sending for a new man at the top. Don't tell my heart. Atlantic names a line dancing Dutchman as the new boss. So what's his particular skill set? 7:31, breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari, here on LBC, the news, Thomas Watts.
Attention is shifting to Gaza's future after the exchange of Israeli hostages and Palestinian detainees. Sir Keir Starmer says Britain can play a role in monitoring the ceasefire and decommissioning Hamas's weapons. 4 in 10 hospices in England are planning to reduce or stop end-of-life care if they can't secure more funding in the next 6 months. Figures shared with LBC by the Lib Dems suggest more than 12,000 terminally ill patients could be affected. Figures just released show the unemployment rate rose to 4.8% in the 3 months to August. There was also another fall in the number of job vacancies in the UK over the last quarter. LBC weather, cloudy with light rain for many places, brighter skies in central Scotland, a high of 17 degrees.
On the latest episode of The Newsagents.
The joy of the families in Israel. The victory lap for Donald Trump. But is it coming just a touch too soon? One step has been taken. There are many more still to come.
Get the latest episode of The Newsagents with Emily Maitlis, John Sokol and Lewis Goodall. Listen or watch on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
Hey, it's me, your dishwasher. I'm sorry about the chaos last night. I think a fork got jammed in my racks. Whoops. Don't even check the bills. I've overdone it. Don't get mad, okay? But I used up lots of power yesterday. Sometimes you just have to blow off some steam.
It can feel like all your energy does is take, take, take. But the longer you're with OVO, the more rewards you get. OVO, do energy differently. Beyond customers only. Eligibility required. Redemption limits apply.
For anyone needing assistance when travelling with TfL, such as people with visual or mobility impairments, our Turn Up and Go service has staff on hand to help. It's available at all London Underground, London Overground and Elizabeth Line stations, and there's no need to book. Just turn up and go. That is how we're making the greener way to travel more accessible to all. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Greener than total estimated petrol and diesel car emissions.
The McDonald's breakfast wrap. We could give you a delicious description, but instead, we'll just say that you can now play the Monopoly game at McDonald's with a breakfast wrap. Go on, it's your go. Served until 11 a.m. Subject to availability. Game ends 21st of October. App may be required. 18 plus. UK. See mcdrules.co.uk.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC with cybersecurity from BT. Solutions to help any size business stay protected.
7:34, come back to your reactions. Will this piece last? Let's hope it will, but obviously many of you are giving your views, and unfortunately most of you are quite pessimistic, or many of you, not many, many of you are pessimistic, and how to try and ensure that President Trump, with this what appears to be limited attention span, keeps some focus on the region. That's all to come. Let's get dive into the world of business now, though. Christian Mayer is Editor-in-Chief at City AM, and we have some employment figures, or unemployment figures, if you can remind the listeners what they are, and then interpret them. Christian, morning to you.
Good morning, Nick. Yeah, I think yet again we've seen the latest figures from the Office for National Statistics that rather suggest that the UK labour market is something like, if I can pick a grisly metaphor for so early in the morning, it's a little bit like the frog who's being very slowly boiled as opposed to any sort of more dramatic event. We haven't seen any kind of, you know, serious crash or recession or shock that's led to a great wave of layoffs. But what we have seen is month-on-month declines, and that coincides with month-on-month increases in business concern. They've been very vocal about the concerns about the pressures, the cost pressures, the regulatory pressures they're facing. We talk about it all the time, and that has a real consequence, and nothing more real than fewer jobs. There's about 100,000 fewer payroll jobs now than this time 12 months ago. The official unemployment rate was last month 4.7%. It is, as of this morning, 4.8%. So it's going in the wrong direction. Also, the number of vacancies in the UK labour market continues to slide. And this is a headache for, among others, the Bank of England, who will be assessing this data ahead of the next interest rate decision. They will be looking in particular at the wage growth figures. Now, wage growth is still reasonably high, a little warm, about 4.7%. It is down on last month, and Bank of England policymakers will be looking for that figure to come down a little bit more, I suspect, before they move to cut interest rates again. So that's something they'll keep a very close eye on. But overall, although these monthly and most recent figures from the ONS tend to be revised, and there's always a tweak, and there's always take it with a bit of caution, on the whole now, we know enough, we've seen enough of these data sets released to have a very clear trajectory, and it is not one that points to a labour market that is roaring in good health, and that is not, that is because we do not have a corporate environment and an economic environment that is roaring and in good health.
All right, let's move to other matters. Who's up and away for Virgin Atlantic?
Well, it is all change at Virgin Atlantic. Their long-standing chief executive is on his way out at the end of a sort of five-year strategy period that they run in that business. And Dutchman Cornel Costa will come in from the 1st of January, and he will take over Sir Richard Branson's airline as chief executive. He's currently their chief customer and operating officer. He's had a pretty long career at the company. He will take over as chief executive at a very interesting time, not just for Virgin, which has got big decisions to make, such as whether it wants to re-establish a base at Gatwick, which it pulled out of after COVID, but also for the airline industry as a whole. Lots of debate and opportunities around the way in which the UK is facing aviation with big infrastructure projects, and not least at Heathrow. Virgin will have a noisy voice in that debate. Don't forget there are two proposals on the table to expand Heathrow and give it that additional runway, and the voice of the airline industry will be quite critical to that debate. And the airline industry has been, and Virgin has been amongst this, pretty critical of the way Heathrow operates anyway. So we will look forward to see how Mr. Costa will take forward Virgin, not just as a business, but also in the wider debates about aviation in the UK.
Yeah, quite a colourful character, isn't he? An interesting background to him.
Yes, apparently so. What is it? Line dancing, yes. I think we're told, is one of these. Well, I always think it's quite nice to get these little bits of colour peppered over these corporate CVs. Just helps us try and get a bit of a sense of the man.
I totally agree. Why were Vodafone customers facing a blackout?
Now, you might expect me to be absolutely on top of every twist and turn of the business community. Yesterday afternoon, I thought I was just having quite a quiet afternoon. I thought I was having a bit of a break, a bit of my phone was quiet. I wasn't in the dark for long, although I was out of reception for some time. Vodafone suffered a pretty tremendous blackout across their 4G, 5G and broadband networks. I suppose the headline is that they say that this was a technical fault and is not being treated, at least not initially treated, as a cyber attack. They say it was a technical fault. And, of course, Vodafone also provides networks for many other providers, including Asda and Talk Mobile. And it is slightly embarrassing, given that they have just confirmed their mega merger with Three, saying two networks is better than one, was the slogan behind that mega merger. Yesterday, those figures didn't quite add up. Let's put it like that.
Time for one more story. You choose which you think is great, of great importance.
Well, I think we should also just have a look at retail figures which have been released this morning. And I'm afraid they will add to the sort of drumbeat of concern in the run-up to the budget. We know that retail spending slowed in September. People are beginning to hold on to their money, get a little more cautious ahead of what might happen at that budget. Total retail sales in September increased by 2.3%, but that's down from a much bigger increase from August and indeed July. So particular squeeze on things like household goods, household appliances and clothes. People are now just still dealing with lingering inflation and they're worried about the budget, and it stands to reason that people aren't splashing the cash quite as much, just as it stands to reason that they're not creating jobs and employing people.
Christian May, editor-in-chief at City AM, talk around the same time tomorrow. Thank you for that. 7:40 is the time. In a related conversation, let's take you to X, and this is the moment an Oxford student chanced to put the Zios in the ground during a pro-Palestinian rally in London.
Gaza, Gaza, make us proud! Put the Zios in the ground! Gaza, Gaza, make us proud! Put the Zios in the ground! Gaza,
Metropolitan
Gaza,
Police have confirmed they will investigate this. Now, the protests in London were even raised ahead of Donald Trump's speech by opposition leader Yair Lapid in the Knesset in the Parliament yesterday.
To all those who demonstrated against Israel these past 2 years, on the streets of London and Rome, you were deceived. You were deceived. Propaganda experts, funded by terror money, manipulated you.
Eric, now Lord Pickles, co-chairs the UK Holocaust Memorial Foundation and was special envoy to the UK government for post-Holocaust issues. What action needs to be taken against that student and others involved in that, in your view, Lord Pickles? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. I think in many ways this is a test as to whether or not the government, the judiciary and the police are serious. We're all shocked and worried about the murder of two Jews in Manchester. We've seen in the past where the government has come down hard on a housewife who suggested that hostels be burned down. I can see little or no difference between this and that lady facing the full force of the law. And I think this young man, foolish though he is actually calling for people, for Jews to be put into the ground, which is a euphemism, not clearly for murder. And I think we need to take this very seriously. These death chants, these chants of ethnic cleansing, have emboldened people, have made the persecution of Jews normal, has turned this decent country in one that turns a blind eye to anti-Semitism.
What fuel?
So I think this young man from Burial, should face the full consequences.
Lord Pickles, what fuels this extraordinary level of hatred?
Well, it's a sin as long as a civilization. Anti-Semitism is a terrible thing. I think what we have seen, what is very clear, that this is nothing to do with Gaza. This is about pure hatred of Jews. I mean, it's clearly ironic that it was broadcast on the day when a number of Gazans were put in the ground, to use that young man's expressions, by Hamas for daring to defy them, a day of considerable bloodshed against a day in which the hostages were released.
Lord Pickles, thank you for input on that. 7:43 is the time. Sorry for the line being a little bit bouncy, but we got across all the points you want to make. Let's come to two aspects we're looking at, which is, can this peace now in the Middle East, in Gaza, hold? And how can we hold the attention span of President Trump on the issue? Dennis in Chelmsford. Dennis, what do you want to say? Good morning.
Hi, Nick. Yeah, well, on that note that you just mentioned, I think this is where the UK does come in handy. I think their relationship with Trump, through the royals and through various diplomats, Jonathan Powell, who I didn't vote, is helpful. It is behind the scenes. It's not noticeable particularly, but when Trump starts losing attention span and when things start breaking down, I think that conduit could be very important.
And how should the UK do that? What advice would you give to someone such as the Prime Minister or others?
I think they do it by means of soft diplomacy, by means of that conversation that happens behind the scenes. I think a lot of the countries in the world recognise when Trump and his kind of entourage are heading in a certain direction, away from reality, as it were. They need to be approached, and I think for that reason, the English, particularly the British, rather, sorry, are good at that. I mean, we've lost the old empire days, as somebody mentioned. Of course, that's all gone. But some of the skills, I think, will still retain.
Grateful for your input, Dennis in Chelmsford. Thank you for that. It was an extraordinary victory lap, wasn't it, from Israel through Egypt. But what can we take from what the president said and also his body language?
I'm Professor Harry Witchell, body language expert, and I will be analyzing the awkward interactions and handshakes at yesterday's summit with Nick Ferrari shortly.
And that's coming up in the next hour, 7:45 now. LBC News headlines then, Thomas Watts.
The focus is shifting to Gaza's future after yesterday's exchange of Israeli hostages and Palestinian detainees. 40% of hospices in England are looking at reducing or stopping end-of-life care if they can't secure more funding. And figures out this morning show the unemployment rate rose to 4.8% in the 3 months to August. LBC weather, cloudy today with light rain for many, but brighter in central Scotland. A high of 17 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Traffic is being held on the M25 anti-clockwise in Hertfordshire at junction 17 at Maple Cross. It's because of an accident and there are delays back to junction 19 at Watford. And then also on the M25, but over on the Essex stretch, there were clockwise queues to about 3 miles to junction 28 at the A12. And that's where a van has broken down. Very busy on the A1 southbound to Mill Hill Circus. That's after an accident. And queues on the A3 southbound to Shannon Corner. And that's also after an accident. Long delays on the Aspen Way going westbound to the East India Dock Tunnel exit, and that's where a van's broken down. And still some minor delays on Chiltern Railway services via Rickmansworth.
This is LBC.
Amazon has increased funding for employees to £3,000 a year every year for career development. Like Juliet, she's now a trained technician. And to her, the sound of machinery in need of repair reminds her of how far she's come. In 2 years, she's landed her dream job, providing her with valuable skills. That's up to £3,000 every year for career development at Amazon. Eligibility conditions apply.
This is LBC. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app. Download it now from your app store.
Experience. It's knowing the difference between a good deal and, well, a great deal. Right now, get 3 months free when you take out Saga Health Insurance. You get 24/7 GP access whenever you want it. And the freedom to choose your preferred private hospital with your own room should you need it. Search Saga Health Insurance for a quote today. New customers starting a policy before the 27th of November. Pay bi-monthly direct debit for the first year. Terms and conditions apply. Over 50s only.
Sharing intimate photos of her without her consent.
Unwanted touching. Unwanted comments. Unwanted nudes.
Controlling what she can and can't wear.
Controlling who she can and can't see.
Threatening her.
Enough. This is abuse.
If you think it's wrong, act on it.
Call it out, show support, report it.
There are many ways you can safely tackle violence against women and girls. Find out how at gov.uk/enough. If someone is in danger, call 999.
Tonight's Euro Millions jackpot is £14 million.
It'll have you dancing like nobody's watching. Yeah, baby. Just make sure nobody is watching. Get in tonight's Euro Millions draw. Play on app.
Estimated jackpot. Account terms, rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
When BP asked me to read the voiceover for their new Wild Bean Cafe ad, I thought I knew what to expect. But when they told me I'd be reading the script next to a mountain waterfall, on horseback, strumming a harp, in a hailstorm, naked, ow, 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 ow. Well, that was wildly unexpected. Just like Wild Bean Cafe having a freshly ground signature espresso blend for everything from Americanos to flat whites in a fuel station. Wowzers. Wild Bean Cafe, only at BP. Subject to availability at selected BP stores only.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC with cybersecurity from BT. Protect your small business and understand cybersecurity.
It's 11 minutes before 8. We're going to come to events back here at home. We're going to be hearing from the Housing Secretary about trying to get Britain building faster through landmark planning bill. Yes, we seem to have heard that before, but while we wait for him, it gives me an opportunity to feature some of the texts and social media that's coming in concerning events yesterday. Mike in Crawley said, I see Sir Keir refers to our involvement in Northern Ireland. If I was in the IDF, I might be seriously concerned. Such involvement could lead to alleged terrorists being given letters of pardon, while members of the IDF could face zealous inquiries and charges for any alleged transgression of their duty. I can only think that Sir Keir and his entourage have a selective memory. You also point out, Mike, that you found it difficult yesterday to take in the news. You write, I wish every happiness to the returned hostages and have condolences for the families of those who did not. But I simply could not suffer the dreadful sycophancy around Donald Trump, a man who wants a peace prize while deploying the military against his own citizens. Dean Rhodes says Starmer looked embarrassed and bemused while Trump behaved like a serial womaniser who'd woken up beside his latest conquest. Tough words like that. Martin says, what did Starmer look like yesterday? A world leader or a circus clown? But we played a key part in the deal. It certainly didn't look like it to me. Do keep them coming. Matt's in Heathrow. Matt, your take. How long is this piece going to last, you imagine? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Thanks for your balanced views as well. I really appreciate them, sure, listening to your station. Basically, I hope it lasts for eternity. Both sides of these people have been through enough. And I hope they got the sense to see that pieces can be everlasting if they truly want it, really.
Yep.
But what I called up for, Nick, was you had a caller on Ali, and he made reference to Dresden.
Yes.
And I think if he looks back a few years earlier during that Second World War period, we had the Blitz in London for 57 days and 57 nights, mm-hmm, and he absolutely bypassed that. I'm not saying Dresden was right, because it was an awful, awful part of that World War II history.
I think he was just likening the landscape, effectively, in Gaza being much as the landscape was in Dresden, wasn't? I mean, that's what I took from it. I don't think that there was historical significance. It was almost like architectural significance, in a sense, really.
Yeah, no, well, if you have a look at the Docklands, Nick, it weren't too far from it.
No.
The Docklands in the east end of London.
Indeed.
I think we were completely obliterated as well.
Yeah.
But now, hopefully, the rest of the world can come together and help rebuild this place, and that makes it a place for where people can go and actually live a normal life, and whatever religion they may be, they can study their religion there, and they can do their religion there, and they can do whatever. And maybe I'm looking through idealistic glasses, but the plan has been set. Whether we agree or not, the plan has been set, and let's hope it can be followed.
Lastly, the key, of course, is to keep Trump President Trump focused on it, isn't it? How is that to be achieved, Matt?
I just think that these people have knocked him over the ears. They've actually got to get behind him now, because he's achieved the unachievable in most people's eyes. And now it's time to say, okay, we may have been wrong about Mr. Trump, President Trump, but now it's time to say, okay, let's have a go forward. Let's see what we've got to do. They've got to get behind the man. Whether they like him or loathe him, if he's showing peace, and it is peace that we're getting there,
yes,
then it has to be followed right through to the end.
But some people have TDS, don't they? Trump derangement syndrome, Matt. They just hear the name and they automatically take against whatever he might or might not have achieved.
No, exactly, Nick. But they're going to have to get over that, because that's how peace is achieved. That is how peace is achieved. Sometimes you've given a mind so you can change it. Not so you can keep it, God give us a mind so we can change our mind.
Matt, thank you for your kind words about the show. Have yourself a good day. 7:52 or 8 minutes before 8 is the time. Let's come back to matters here at home. And new powers to be handed to try and stop councils rejecting planning permissions, tackle blocking in the court, accelerate reservoirs, wind farms and large housing schemes. The drive, of course, the plan for change. Here with more details, Labour MP and Housing, Communities and Local Government Secretary Steve Reid. What is it that you and your colleagues, what powers are you and your colleagues announcing today? Good morning to you.
Good morning, Nick. Always a pleasure to be on your show. Well, I mean, we've talked about this on the show before now, but we've got a housing crisis in this country. You've got young people that can't get their first foot on the housing ladder. You've got the dream of home ownership closed down to too many people. It's because we haven't been building enough new homes for such a long time. Now, we've already got legislation going through Parliament to speed up the planning system. I'm making further changes to that, announcing further changes to that, hopefully to come into force next month. For instance, councils are far too ready to block new developments, which, when they go to appeal, get overturned and are then allowed to be built. All they're really doing is adding time and adding cost that means it's harder for people to get a home. So I will have new powers to call in decisions where the council's minded to refuse in the parlance. And if there's not a strong case for refusing, then the housing scheme will go ahead.
When will this actually, when will these powers be in effect? When can you and your colleagues start doing this?
November is the intention. Of course, you know, it has to be go through Parliament first. We're introducing it in the House of Lords initially, then it will go to the House of Commons. But all being well, it becomes law in November. So these are very, very fast moving changes that we're proposing.
They need to be because, of course, you have this extraordinary target of 1.5 million homes by the lifetime of this Parliament. Yeah. What number are we at currently, Secretary of State?
About 240,000 this year, 29% increase in starts over a year ago. So we are starting to see movement, but it's not enough. So, you know, we're changing the law, as I said. That's not the end of the job. I'm announcing these new reforms today, and I'll be back on your show in a few weeks' time announcing further reforms to get house building moving, because we have far too many barriers to getting homes built in this country, and that is what is stopping people from realising their dream of a home of their own that they can afford to buy.
The London, you know London well, the Evening Standard says that the city is expected to deliver 440,000 of those homes you mentioned, but you may be aware that they reported last week sales of new build private homes of London have collapsed to their lowest level in history. That was in May, when just 19 houses and flats were recorded as changing hands, 23 in April. Prior to that, the lowest number was 367 in February 2011. We're down from 367 to 19.
Yeah.
What's gone wrong, Secretary of State?
It's absolutely shocking, the failure to get house building going. It's not just in London, it's across the whole country. And it's because of what the previous government, they scrapped house building targets, so local authorities were no longer expected to build homes. They introduced new regulation that added years of delay to getting the schemes going. And if you do that, you end up with a situation where you just get 19 sales in London in 1 month. The package of reforms I'm announcing today will deal with part of that, but I'm going to come back on your show in a few weeks' time with the Mayor of London and announce an acceleration package specifically looking at what has gone wrong in London so that we can correct that and get house building going here again.
But shouldn't the Mayor have been doing more before this? This has been going on for months now. London has fallen off a cliff as regards house
sales. It wasn't
the
Mayor that introduced those new regulatory burdens. It was a previous Conservative government. It wasn't the Mayor that scrapped house building targets. It was the previous Conservative
government.
But he's
allowed to maintain targets in London. He often talks about house building as a priority, and it's not been, has it?
If you look at what the boroughs are doing, Bromley Council, which is controlled by the Conservatives, 95% behind their new house building target. Compare that with Newham, a Labour-run borough, which is ahead of their target. So I can see who the builders are, I can see who the blockers are, but I want the Mayor of London to have more power to make Conservative-run boroughs build the homes that people there need.
Let's move a little from your housing brief to your community's brief. What action will be taken against the East London mosque that stopped teenage girls and women from taking part in a fun run on the weekend?
Yeah, I saw these reports, Nick, and I was as horrified as anybody else. It's absolutely unacceptable that women should be blocked from going on a fun run in a public space when the men are allowed to go out there and do that. Now, we have an equalities watchdog. I'm sure that they will be aware of this case. It's getting a lot of publicity, and quite rightly so, and they will determine whether there has been any breach of the law or of regulations, and then I'm sure sanctions will follow as appropriate. But speaking for myself, I was appalled, as I'm sure all of your listeners and viewers are this morning.
What sort of sanctions could be applied?
Well, it depends on the nature of the breach, I think. But for one thing, we do not want a situation in this country where men are allowed to do things that women are then barred from. We cannot tolerate that.
Staying again with your brief as Community Secretary, you might have had sight of footage on X which shows an Oxford-educated student chanting in London on the weekend, "Gaza, Gaza, make us proud, put the Zios," as in Zionists, "put the Zios in the ground." Again, what action should be taken against him?
Well, that is absolutely disgusting. Clearly, anti-Semitic Jew hatred in a public place, and the Jewish community should not have to put up with that. None of us should have to put up with that kind of racism. And I hope the individual has been reported to the police, because I feel sure that there will be a breach of the law in that kind of chant. We've heard already what the Home Secretary has been saying over recent days. She's not going to tolerate some of the behaviours that was taking place on those marches, which has been tolerated for far too long. We need to take action. We need to take steps to protect our Jewish community from that kind of hatred.
Are you able to clarify just how involved the United Kingdom was with the peace scenes and the conferences that we saw play out in across Israel and Egypt yesterday?
Well, I mean, you kind of don't need me to confirm anything there, because President Trump's lead negotiator, Stephen Witkoff, has put out a statement thanking the United Kingdom for the role that we played in as part of an international effort to secure this very hopeful peace deal in Gaza and Israel. Now, of course, we all pay tribute to President Trump. Whatever you think of him, he did really well in this case. He secured something which has eluded others for many, many years. The hostilities have stopped. Aid is coming into Gaza. The hostages have been released. Whatever you think of the president, he's played a blinder here.
All right. And finally, does the government view China as a threat?
The government recognises that China poses a threat. Of course we do, because the evidence tells us that. We've seen cyber security incidents. It's one of the reasons why the government has increased spending on cyber security by £600 million. Of course, you have to recognise the threats that particular countries may pose. That doesn't mean we're in open hostilities with them, and it doesn't mean that we shouldn't trade with them. It just means that we need to be aware of what those threats that are being posed might be and take action to curb them.
But what therefore lies behind the collapse of the so-called China spy trial, Secretary of State?
Well, there's the security issue that we've just spoken about, and then there are the details of this case, which are quite separate. And the details of this seem to me very, very straightforward. The Crown Prosecution Service asked the government for evidence. That evidence was provided. The CPS then took an independent decision, not involving ministers, that the threshold for prosecution had not been met under the law as it stood at the time. Now, subsequently, the law was strengthened. That was under the previous government. Had they made that law change earlier on, perhaps this case would have stood up in court, but it didn't. The fault, if there is a fault, lies with the previous government for not amending the law earlier.
Details on the landmark planning and infrastructure bill given to us by Steve Reid, Secretary of State for Housing, Communities and Local Government. Thank you for your time. You've taken us to 1 minute after eight. Let's get the LBC News headlines.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, focus is shifting to the next steps of the US-led peace plan for Gaza. Celebrations have continued in Israel and Gaza following the exchange of Israeli hostages and Palestinian detainees yesterday. World leaders met in Egypt to discuss ways to secure a permanent end to the conflict. The Housing Secretary, Steve Reid, has told Nick that he is hopeful.
Now, of course, we all pay tribute to President Trump. Whatever you think of him, he did really well in this case. He secured something which has eluded others for many, many years. The hostilities have stopped. Aid is coming into Gaza. The hostages have been released. Whatever you think of the president, he's played a blinder here.
Four in ten hospices in England are planning to reduce or stop end-of-life care if they can't secure more funding in the next 6 months. Figures shared with LBC by the Liberal Democrats show more than 12,000 terminally ill patients could be affected. Charlie King from Hospice UK says the system is under huge strain.
We're seeing a lot of closure of hospice beds, and we're also seeing cutbacks of the number of visits that hospices make to patients who are at home. And the thing is, this is not only bad for patients and families, it's bad for the NHS as well. More patients will be taking up beds in hospitals, and we know all the pressures that we have in our hospital system.
The Department of Health says it's investing a record £100 million in improving hospice facilities. Authorities have recorded a 50% increase in highly significant cyber attacks against the UK. The National Cyber Security Centre's warned Chinese and Russian hackers are behind a record number of serious incidents. Leading firms have been urged to take immediate action to protect themselves. Figures out this morning show an increase in unemployment and the cooling of wage growth. Christian May from City AM says it's a consequence of low business confidence.
About 100,000 fewer payroll jobs now than this time 12 months ago. The official unemployment rate was last month 4.7%. It is, as of this morning, 4.8%. So it's going in the wrong direction. Also, the number of vacancies in the UK labour market continues to slide.
And Wales will almost certainly have to come through the playoffs for a place in next year's World Cup. They were beaten 4-2 by Belgium in Cardiff last night. Northern Ireland are third in their group after losing 1-0 to Germany. In the city, the FTSE 100 is reopening at 94.42 after closing up 15 yesterday. The pound buys $1.33 and a euro 15. LBC weather quite cloudy today with light rain for many places. Some brighter skies in central Scotland. A high of 17 Celsius. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watt.
Yeah, the radiator's making a gurgling noise.
That's not a noise. It's a cry for help.
Talk to me. Is it your balancing? Is it trapped air from barometric pressure shifts? I see.
Right, a simple flush and some inhibitor fluid will fix it in no time.
Our tradespeople understand what your home needs this winter. Download the Checkatrade app and book a Checkatrade approved tradesperson who will agree costs up front with honest communication. Checkatrade, a job done right. Checkatrade, checkatrade.com.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning, 5 minutes after 8, Tuesday, October the 14th. Coming up in this hour, the injuries, of course, not the only wounds sustained by the hostages. They start a long journey, hopefully to full emotional recovery. We'll look at that. And also, a body language expert was watching the president in action, both in Egypt and prior to that in Israel. We'll give you his report. Back here in the UK, the drive for more screening in prostate cancer. Nick Jones is a businessman diagnosed in 2022. He's now campaigning for better access to that screening.
I don't think it should be up to the patient to go in and ask for something from the doctor. Even though the PSA, as we know, is inaccurate, the tests are getting better and better.
The shocking survey that shows that 6 out of 10 parents, or 60% of parents, thinks it's acceptable for their child or a child to go to primary school still needing to wear nappies. A head teacher in Brighton, Sarah, is understandably frustrated.
Don't think schools have capacity to deal and take responsibility for children's toilet training. I think that is a parent's responsibility.
And back to the story I was just discussing with the housing secretary, the appalling collapse in the sale of new homes in London, despite promises such as...
London, we're building record numbers of homes to help end the housing crisis. And we've built more new homes in recent years than at any time since the 1930s.
That's London Mayor Sir Sadiq Khan, but the figures show, as I'll give you them to you again, in May, just 19 changed hands, new homes. The lowest figure prior to that was 367. Why the crisis?
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Coming up in a moment or two, of course, the hostages made their journeys home, but now, of course, another journey begins for them, which is how does a life of normality ever come after you spent 738 days, in some instances possibly, the majority of which was in tunnels, no light, no fresh air, and again, in some instances, being fed mouldy pita bread. How do you ever get your life back on track from that? We'll be speaking with a leading psychologist who specialises in that field. But first, and I'm sure you heard it all here on LBC, and then some of you perhaps watched it on the TV news bulletins, it was a day of drama. It was a day also, at times, of almost pure theatre. This probably doesn't work as well on what they call audio, or just sound, but if you did see it, this is the moment President Trump appeared to invite Sir Keir Starmer to the podium.
United Kingdom. Where's United Kingdom? Where's our friend? Where? Come here. Is everything going good?
Very good.
That's very nice of you here. These people all came in like 20-minute notice, and I think it's fantastic. And we have so many others, and just so many others.
You have to feel sorry for Sir Keir because he steps up. He obviously thinks he's about to be given the mic, but no, that is not going to happen. You can see it on the LBC app or lbc.co.uk that Sir Keir, understandably then, having been told that nice to see you and are you feeling well, just has his back turned. Trump turns his back and Keir has to walk back to his post. But what else do we take from that? Harry Witchell is a professor of physiology at Brighton Sussex Medical School and a body language expert. Well, you've had a lot of tape to watch, Harry. You've been a busy individual. Professor, what do you take? What do you want to point out first? Good morning.
So, for sure, the most... Good morning, Nick. Nice to see you again.
Yeah.
So, it's very important to realise that this... Trump has once again grabbed hold of the media landscape. He's controlled it by bringing in lots of people almost against their will. As Trump just said, many people had only had 20 minutes notice. And so there was a lot of diplomacy involved in that handshaking scene where people came to talk to Trump. Some people were very happy. Others, like Giorgia Meloni, barely able to contain herself with how she felt possibly abused or bullied into the situation. Mark Carney from Canada. Again, when Mark Carney stands in front of me, he did what we would call a crotch block, where instead of shaking Trump's hand, when they were photographed together, he held his hands almost right in front of his his crotch.
Delicate area, right.
Delicate areas. And a similar thing happened with Germany's Merz, who also slightly gave a crotch block. But what about Sir Keir? Well, Sir Keir did his best. He's not being bullied by Trump directly. He's very submissive to Trump. He was ungraciously dismissed, as you just showed a moment ago, so it's very sad in some ways, but I think necessary given the successes that Britain has had in its interaction. So from a body language perspective, Sir Keir is doing his best possible. He's a very intellectual man, a thoughtful man, dealing with Trump, who's a very physical, direct man. You can see that there's going to be a difference. You can sometimes see, if you look carefully at the body language, Sir Keir slightly leans away from Trump ever so often because he's never quite comfortable in that kind of well-met camaraderie. It's not his style. But basically, Sir Keir is holding his own, given that he's completely submissive.
What of the physicality, Harry, between Trump and Emmanuel Macron?
So that was a really interesting handshake. As you know, since 2016, Trump has been sort of baiting Macron with bad handshakes. As early as 2016, Trump would literally grab Macron and yank him off his feet, literally pulling Macron around. Macron, as he approached the podium, was fully expecting this, still looking for some kind of bad interaction. Macron looks down, readies himself, does a proper handshake, and gets away with it. Is a handshake on top. And then Trump fools him at the last second by turning the hands around and doing a bro handshake, where Trump is finally on top of Macron. So once again, Trump is able to outplay Macron ever so slightly, even though Macron was ready for it and knew that this is what was going to happen. Macron managed to maintain himself for the first few seconds, but Trump wins again.
This is your bread and butter. What stood out to you most of all the tape you've watched for us, Harry? What's the moment you'll take from yesterday's events?
Trump ungraciously dismissing Sir Keir Starmer. That moment where he bites him to the microphone, but not really, and just turns his back on him and leaves Sir Keir to figure out, oh, I've been dismissed. You know, to quietly walk back. It was such a sad moment for me. And I really, you know, I think, you know, the world of Sir Keir, he's done his best to do a difficult job. But it really, that looked very sad at that moment.
Harry, always enjoy speaking with you. Have yourself a good one. Professor Harry Witchell, Professor of Physiology at Brighton and Sussex Medical School, a body language expert, 12 after 8. Now, this is what the lip readers are saying took place. Trump says to Mac, this is to the Macron exchange, nice to see you, so you agreed. Trump then turns from the camera. Are you being genuine? Trump asks. Mr. Macron says, of course. The US president then tightens his grip on Macron. Okay, so now I want to know why you hurt me. I already know. He then squeezes Macron's hand hard again. Slowly and clearly, Trump says, I am making peace. Macron then taps Trump's hand and replies, come on. I only hurt those who hurt others. He says, and to which Macron says, I see, we will have to see about that. So that's all going on as they're effectively, I gave you a little bit of French there, as they're effectively resting in front of the world's cameras. So that's the body language side. I mentioned earlier, the hostages made their journeys home, but it is probably the start of an even longer journey to some kind of normality. Can they ever get there? Now, we saw footage of so many of the hostages reuniting with your families. Let's just pick one here. 22-year-old Matan Angres embracing his family after, of course, he'd been freed. Just chanting his name, Matan, Matan. Dr. Kerry Nixon is a consultant forensic psychologist specialising in trauma. OK, your colleagues over in Israel, and I'm sure have already started work or are preparing to start work, what will they need to assess? How do they move forward with this, Doctor? Good morning.
Good morning. The trauma is going to be horrific, and what we will probably see is that there will be the initial elation of being freed, the joy of seeing their families, but then the reality will set in for many people. They'll also be hit with grief because people that they didn't know were dead, they'll find out that they're dead. And then the PTSD symptoms may start, not for everybody, not everybody will automatically get PTSD, but many will. And what we actually have is something called complex PTSD, which is where there's been layers of trauma, not just one singular event. And this is a long time with many awful things, as you said, have happened. So those layers of trauma will come out, and they'll come out in symptoms such as flashbacks, nightmares, depression, low mood, inability to get on with normal day-to-day life, and that will require some specialist treatment. And I hope that's what they will, I'm sure they will. There is good work that takes place in Israel, and I'm sure that's what happened. The main treatment we see and we use with the military here is something called EMDR, which is the gold standard of trauma treatment, and I expect that will be delivered to some of the hostages.
Doctor, noting I don't know what a normal life is, but can these folk ever hope to... none of us know, do they? There is no such thing in reality. No. But can they return to, single quotes, a normal life, close quotes?
It will be very, very difficult. As I said, they will be elated that they are alive and they are free and they're back with their families. And they will embrace whatever their normal life is. However, those demons of what they've experienced will interfere with that. And also, they're returning to... what they're returning to, which is, it's not that they're returning to a fantastic life. You know, the whole region is in disarray. You know, we're sitting here witnessing everything that's happening, and they've got to deal with that. So it's not that they're just returning to, life is going to go on. What is life for them?
One of the requirements of the handover yesterday as part of the 20-point plan was that the hostages were not used as sort of propaganda purposes. You may recall in the past how there have been, and they've even been forced to stand sometimes with Hamas on either side of them, denouncing Israel or whatever it might be. What is the impact of that when, as you're being handed over, you're suddenly forced to take part in effectively a propaganda video?
Oh, absolutely horrific, because you are, they're going to be physically as well. I mean, we've seen images. There's going to be physical illness. There's going to be, and to stand there with your, basically the people who've taken you hostage and be made to say things, yes, that will just further the trauma and further those horrific emotions that they're going to be having. There's going to be anger, there's going to be hatred, there's going to be so many emotions that they are going to be processing over the next, not just days and weeks, but months. And that's the thing that's really important. We may see people that seem fine for even months, and then things will set in when they can't adjust and they struggle to adjust with their normal life. And everybody else around them is so happy that they're home, but they potentially are going to be then dealing with what's going on in their heads.
Doctor, thanks for your time this morning. Kerry Nixon, consultant forensic psychologist specialising in trauma. Let's get straight to the headlines, running a bit behind the clock. 17 minutes after 8, LBC News, Thomas Watts.
Attention is shifting to Gaza's future after the exchange of Israeli hostages and Palestinian detainees. 4 in 10 hospices are planning to reduce or stop end-of-life care if they can't secure more funding in the next 6 months. And figures out this morning show the unemployment rate rose to 4.8% in the 3 months to August. LBC weather, cloudy with light rain for many places, brighter skies in central Scotland, a high of 17 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Long delays continue on the M25 in two places. Firstly, anti-clockwise, it's slow at junction 17 at Maple Cross after an accident, and then clockwise, it's slow for about 5 miles, going clockwise to junction 28 at the A12 after a van broke down earlier. Everything's open now, but it's still very slow. Also, delays on the M1 northbound to junction 10 at Luton Airport, and that's after an accident where two lanes are closed for recovery. On the A1 south Northbound, it remains closed at the Black Cat roundabout. The overnight works are taking place, so that's causing queues. And on the underground, Bakerloo and Northern Line trains are stopping at Elephant and Castle Station.
This is LBC.
I'm telling you, raise taxes, that's how.
Cut spending, less waste, more sense.
Move north, get more for your money.
Until winter hits your heating bill.
Fair.
Up to 9.13% annual return. We all agree that's strong.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's hard to ignore.
Cufflink. Auto-invest property-backed from £500. Visit cufflink.com. That's K-U-F-L-I-N-K. Register your interest today. Your capital is at risk. Tax rules apply to IF ISAs and may be subject to change. Cufflink is authorised and regulated by the FCA.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060973. LBC.
The Monopoly game at McDonald's is back. And with a 1-in-4 chance to win instantly on pack, you could get your hands on a £2,000 Jet 2 holiday, a Big Mac, Merlin annual passes for 4, and even more epic prizes. Go on, it's your go. 18 plus, UK, ends 21st of October. Selected menu items, subject to availability. App may be required. See mcdrules.co.uk.
When BP asked me to read the voiceover for their new Wild Bean Cafe ad, I thought I knew what to expect. But when they told me I'd be reading the script next to a mountain waterfall, on horseback, strumming a harp, in a hailstorm, naked, ow, 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 ow. Well, that was wildly unexpected. Just like Wild Bean Cafe having a freshly ground signature espresso blend for everything from Americanos to flat whites in a fuel station. Wowzers. Wild Bean Cafe. Only at BP. Subject to availability at selected BP stores only.
Sharing intimate photos of her without her consent.
Unwanted touching. Unwanted comments. Unwanted nudes.
Controlling what she can and can't wear.
Controlling who she can and can't see.
Threatening her.
Enough. This is abuse.
If you think it's wrong, act on it.
Call it out, show support, report it.
There are many ways you can safely tackle violence against women and girls. Find out how at gov.uk/enough. If someone is in danger, call 999.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC with cybersecurity from BT. Security solutions built for businesses.
20 after 8, mercifully, I would imagine none of you have ever had to deal with a situation as the hostages have endured. But we all have traumatic events in our life. Of course, if you are serviceman or servicewoman, PTSD is well known. How do you cope with the trauma of that? And how do you, and I, that's why I always say, how do you put, quotes, a normal life? There is no such thing. But how do you get back to a sense of normality? Gary's in Plymouth. Gary, how do you want to start on this? Good morning to you, sir.
I think if you look to others, and the example I said to your producer was Terry Waite, is that perhaps some never will.
Just to remind everybody, Terry Waite was a religious envoy who was, gosh, he was kept chained to... How long was he was chained to a radio? For like 3 years, wasn't he?
4 years, yeah.
4 years in Lebanon. My God. Right, okay. And what was the point you want to make about Terry Waite?
I mean, he explored solitude greatly after he was released, and he actually said that when he was released, that part of him longed for solitude. So, you know, perhaps that would be part of the hostages when they're released, and that a bizarre part of them will actually miss solitude.
Isn't that interesting? And that's, I'm afraid you've obviously read a book or you've heard a documentary or something about this, so this is actually what Terry Waite said, was it then, Gary?
Yeah, when he was released, yeah, he said that part of him longed for solitude. He spent a lot of time exploring it and actually wrote a book, Solitude, Memories, People and Places.
Have you read that book?
Yes, I have, yes. Yeah.
Lastly, what's the message that you take from it?
I just as everyone else in the world, I'm sure, wish them all well.
What did you learn from reading Terry Waite's book? What did you learn from that, sorry?
Oh, sorry, no. I suppose just that it affects everybody differently. And, you know, people who've been forced into solitary lives can have profound effects on them that will never ever leave them.
Thanks for that. I wasn't aware of that, though, about Terry Wade. I remember, obviously, his story very, very vividly. You know, you're sort of the late 80s, I suppose. Good Lord. Yeah, it would have been up through the early 90s. Gary, thank you. We'll come back to that conversation in a moment. Now, prostate cancer, known as the silent killer, because it's largely symptomless and, as a result, very difficult to detect early, which means undiagnosed, it can often not be found until it's too late. Now, the most common cancer in men, more than 52,000 new cases a year in the UK. And every year, unfortunately, around 12,000 lives are cut short by the failure to treat this particular condition. Now, for purpose of full clarity, I need to say that I am an ambassador for Prostate Cancer UK. I'm very proud to do whatever I can to raise awareness. So let's tell you that the health service could offer targeted prostate cancer checks at just £18 a patient, lower than the cost of breast cancer screening, which is rightly available to women aged 50 to 70. This life-saving screening program would require 5 more MRI scanners and 75 extra staff, including 4 urologists, says the report from Prostate Cancer Research. This would help catch the disease earlier, which I said shows around 12,000 people, sadly, we lose. The UK National Screening Committee advising the government on screening programs is considering developments around prostate cancer diagnosis and will report its findings at some point later in the year. Amy Rylance is Assistant Director of Health Improvement at Prostate Cancer UK, joins me now. Thank you for coming on. How important do you think a screening programme could be? Good morning.
Good morning. So screening is what we all are hoping for, because screening is the way that we are going to reduce the number of men who die from prostate cancer. Because, as you say, in its early stages, it's so often asymptomatic. And so we really need to get to a point where we have a safe and effective screening test. I think the big unknown question at the moment is whether we have a test that is safe and effective enough for the national rollout of screening. And that's what the National Screening Committee are looking at the moment. So me and my team submitted evidence back in 2022, looking particularly at the case for screening for men at the highest risk of prostate cancer. So black men, men with a family history of the disease. And we also know that men with a BRCA gene have a much higher risk of getting prostate cancer. We believe that the evidence base has tipped to the point where screening is the right thing for those men, but we need the National Screening Committee to review the full evidence, to look at all of the harms, all of the benefits that would come from screening. And we're waiting for that decision, should come late November, early December.
It's tremendous, the success that's been enjoyed in the field of getting screening for breast cancer. Why is this, would appear, proving so difficult, do you imagine?
I think one of the great challenges of screening for prostate cancer is that prostate cancer is such a diverse disease. So you talked in the intro about 12,000 men die from prostate cancer every year. It's the second biggest cancer killer in men. So for a lot of men, it is a very serious, very aggressive disease. But we also know that one in four men who are diagnosed with prostate cancer have a type of cancer that is so slow growing that the treatment will cause them more harm than the cancer ever would. And so historically, we've really struggled to know which men are which. And so screening trials historically that looked at finding everyone who had prostate cancer, they wound up treating a lot of men, causing side effects for those men, where actually the cancer would never have done them any harm. I think the big question now is whether the science has got good enough to know which men have aggressive disease that need treating and which men would be better off left well alone.
Caught early, it's actually a remarkable success, or it can be a remarkable success story, can't it, Amy?
Yeah, absolutely. So in its localised form, prostate cancer is very treatable, and actually we have a range of different treatments, and the treatments are getting better. So there's new ways of doing radiotherapy, which are much shorter courses. So where just a few years ago you might have had to have 38 separate doses of radiation, it can now be done in as little as 5 doses. So the treatment is getting better all the time. But what we know is that the earlier you find it, the easier it is to treat. Left later, treatments are more aggressive. They cause more side effects. So that's why, you know, right now what I'd say to listeners is know your risk. So Prostate Cancer UK have an online risk checker. You can just Google prostate risk checker, ask you a couple of quick questions, helps you to know if you're at risk. And if you are at risk, what you can do about it right now. So it's not about waiting for screening. It's about what actions you can take today.
Amy Rylance, thank you. You're Assistant Director of Health Improvement of Prostate Cancer UK. The Prostate Cancer Research Report is launched at the House of Commons today. Let's come back to our conversation about those hostages. And I want to address a point made by a number of people. Anvir, I think you've forgotten there were hostages on both sides. Can you please talk about the Palestinian hostages that were released and their trauma? Gemma, I find it interesting your discussion this morning focuses on the experience of the Israeli hostages, completely neglecting to even acknowledge Palestinians. They were held in Israeli jails in terrible conditions for being in the wrong place at the wrong time, and they're not going to find their experiences any different. The difficulty there is, and I hear exactly what you say, Anvir and Gemma, but I point you to the coverage that we heard here on LBC yesterday that you might have seen on some of your television screens last night, or that you can see in your newspapers this morning. And it is all from the Israeli side, because that is where the media was. Now, for whatever reason, and I'm sure Hamas have access to video cameras and still photographs and whatever it might be, but for whatever reason, they did not give the same sort of coverage. Had there been, then of course, and there has been some footage, but very, very limited, very limited. Had there been footage of Palestinians being reunited with their families, had there been the sort of cases that we now have, and I can read you, I won't because I haven't got time, but I can read you fairly, not extensive, but a degree of detail in the background of all 20. Now, I can give you their names, their ages. In some instances, I can give you their children. I can give you everything, because that is the way that the Israel side has chosen to do it. Now, I have no idea. I'm not in news management for the Hamas or any of the Palestinian authorities. I don't know why they've done it in that fashion. But please be aware, Anvit and Gemma, we can only go with the facts that we've got, and that is that we do know so much about the Israeli side and not the other side. We might return to that conversation, but coming up after the news.
This is Ella Hodson. I'm a writer at The Times. I got my bike stolen, but I got it back. No thanks to the Met, though. I'll be chatting to Nick Ferrari in just a few minutes.
It's an extraordinary determination and actually no lack of courage that that young woman displayed to get her bike back. She was absolutely determined. She'll explain why in a few minutes. It's 8:30. You're listening to Breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari, here on LBC. News time. Thomas Watts.
The United Nations has warned of the need to surge more humanitarian aid into Gaza. It follows the exchange of Israeli hostages and Palestinian detainees in the first phase of Donald Trump's peace plan. Britain's cybersecurity agency has warned Chinese and Russian hackers are behind a record number of serious online attacks. The National Cybersecurity Centre recorded a 50% increase in highly significant incidents last year. The UK's unemployment rate hit its highest level for more than 4 years. It reached 4.8% in the latest quarter, with figures also showing another fall in job vacancies. LBC weather, cloudy with light rain for many places, brighter skies in central Scotland, a high of 17 degrees.
Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4 p.m.
This is a good day. This is a day where there is hope. This is a day where there is positivity. For all of my adult life, this is the closest that it has ever been to having genuine peace in that part of the world. Is that not a cause for celebration?
Tom Swarbrick with cybersecurity from BT. Security solutions built for businesses. LBC.
Build your own package with TUI. Let's go. City break or a beach escape. Lovely. Fly from your local airport.
Taxi's here.
Handy. Any day of the week. Ideal. On a TUI flight or a partner airline.
This is your captain speaking.
Nice. How many nights? 3? 5? 14? Perfect. More options, more choice. All wrapped up with a TUI smile. TUI. Live happy. Atoll and Abtu protected. Booking T's and C's apply.
You know when that get-up-and-go feeling has got up and gone? I need the kitchen to feel less Monday morning and more cosy weekend cafe.
Right. Wayfair it is.
Exactly. Think a breakfast bar that says you've got this, some plush velvet stools and a coffee machine that practically sings.
With furniture and decor for every style and budget. Wayfair turns your home dreams into reality. Just one tap to get it out of your head and into your home. Download the Wayfair UK app and shop now.
Imagine a delicious patty nestled between two buns with cheese and ketchup. It's not a burger. That patty is actually sausage, which makes this a sandwich. A breakfast sausage sandwich. The new $1.99 sausage sandwich from McDonald's. Made with RSPCA assured pork. Until 11 a.m. Price and participation may vary. Upcharges and fees apply to delivery. Subject to availability.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC with cybersecurity from BT. Protecting businesses of all sizes against cyber threats.
8:32, as I said just before the news, a major part of research done by the Cancer Research Organisation is put before the House of Commons as regards trying to nudge them towards screening of men for prostate cancer. Aaron's in Pontefract. Aaron, what's your story? Good morning.
Hi, good morning. Sorry, first time call, a bit nervous.
Oh, nothing to be nervous about, sir. I trust you're well.
Yeah, I'm all well, thank you.
Good.
But yeah, my story is, I had a friend, his brother, he had the symptoms of prostate cancer.
Yes.
So he went to the doctors, got checked, got positive for cancer. So, but the doctor said that it could be an inheritance thing. So he got told his brothers need to come in and get checked out.
Right.
So my friend went to the doctors, obviously the usual, oh, I'm fine, I've got no symptoms. Turned out he did have prostate cancer.
Right, how advanced was it?
It was very early, so he was able to be treated, no problems at all.
Well, if you catch it early, it's a 90% success rate in treatment, which is tremendous.
Yes, yeah. He goes back every now and again just to get double check, just to make sure.
Right.
And I think he is now coming to a point where he doesn't have to go get checked anymore.
Right. I think he will, at least I would have thought, every year, surely, they need to, don't
Yeah, well, once a year, I knew that he did for once a year, but his brother did end up coming back for his brother, did the cancer. But what? Luckily, he's now back in.
In his prostate again?
Back. I think it had just spread, but they didn't know.
Okay. Now, I hope you're going to reply in the affirmative. You have had a check, have you, Aaron?
I found a lump once before.
Right.
So I go and get checked, but it's in my family as well. Quite a lot.
So what do you do, Lassie? Do you get a check every year or every other year? How are you doing it, Aaron?
Only when I show symptoms, really. I'm a bit slack at that bit.
I think, do you know what I'd really like you to do now? And you're fantastic. I don't know what you have to be nervous about. You told your story brilliantly on the radio. It would be great if you now put the phone down and picked it up to your surgery, you know, because if it's a history of it in the family, what's to lose? And just make sure you get another check-in. Aaron, because I want to talk to you again soon and hear you on the radio for a second time. Thank you, matey. Be well. Best to your family and, of course, your friends who are caught up in this. Be like, Aaron, get it off your chest, get it on the radio. Give me a call on that number. I think it begins with... Well, it does begin with a zero. Then I think the second number's a five, but I'm not going to put a lot of money on that. I haven't given it for 20 years, so I'm not going to start now. 8:35... Fascinating story in the Times newspaper today with the headline, I recovered my stolen bike, no thanks to the Met. And the person who went on this, at times, quite brave journey, joins me now, journalist Ella Hodson. Good to have you on, Ella. Thanks for coming by. The story has a happy ending, but you have a typical, as you write, a typical night out for anybody living in a big city. You happen to live in London, and you go to retrieve your bicycle. Ella, what happens next? Morning.
It just disappeared. I don't know. I was walking up and down the street. I just thought it was going to come back out of thin air, I think. So, I was kind of in disbelief. And then I walked home, because obviously I couldn't cycle home.
Yep.
And I was just in a daze, really.
Now, this has been given to you by your mum. Might I ask, you don't write, so if you don't want to give me the value, I understand. Are you going to tell us what it's worth, or would you decline from doing that?
It's upwards of £500.
It's a lot of money. That's a lot of money. So you realise your bike's been nicked. Let's stress that you did lock it. You did everything you were meant to do. You're a responsible bike user. Yeah. But then some friends told you where to start looking. Ella.
Yes. Yeah. I put some feelers out to friends who had got their bikes stolen before, and they said it's probably being pawned on the internet somewhere. And check Facebook Marketplace, check Gumtree. I've never used Gumtree before, so that was, I made an account, and it was quite literally just the second search when I put in white bike. So yeah.
How did you know it was yours?
So it's a particular brand that's not too common, I don't think. I've never really seen anyone else with that brand. And it had a piece of masking tape on the back.
Oh, right.
Everything else had been taken off, like my drinks thing. There was a sticker from the shop that I got it from in where I'm from in Grimsby. And right. That had all been taken off. But this piece of masking tape was still on the back.
So you've got it. You've got your bike and you've got the bloke who's trying to flog it. And then you open a dialogue with him, do you?
Yes, yeah. I said, oh, I'm really interested in this bike. Can I come get it tomorrow night? And he said, yeah, why not? I'm in Hoxton. He was selling it for 80 quid, yeah. Which was kind of a bruised ego moment.
And then you decide to call the police. What happened next?
Yeah, so I'd called the police on the night that it was stolen, and then they'd closed the case almost straight away because there was just, this probably happens all the time, so they can't do much. But then I reopened it and they said, okay, ring us an hour before you go and we'll be there in Hoxton. And,
do you sense they would look on from afar, or they were going to suddenly bowl out and try and nick the bloke? Did they indicate what their tactics might be, Ella?
They actually didn't. I kind of assumed that they were going to try and nick the bloke, to be honest. That was my assumption. But, I wasn't really too sure.
No. But things change. You have to move quite quickly, don't you?
Yes, yeah. He was slipping through my fingers. He said he was going to sell it to someone else, and I really was scared that he was going to do that. So I took my friend in tow, and we just went together, and she had gotten a Lime bike just in case we had to make a quick exit. So,
And tell us what happens. So the police say we're not coming.
Yes, they said they weren't coming, and so I said, okay, well, I'm going to go on my own, and he bowls up with the bike and his own bike.
And did the police, when you said, right, a young woman meeting almost certainly someone who's stolen the bicycle, we don't know absolute confirmation, but it's almost certainly he's a thief, with a young vulnerable woman in London, and the police said, off you go.
No, they said, we wouldn't recommend doing that.
Right.
And I was determined, and I said, well, I'm just going to do it anyway. And I made sure I was in this lit up area in Hoxton. There was a lot of people coming through. So it wasn't like I was in some dark, dingy corner of a housing estate.
You're very brave.
Well, I don't really know what came over me. I think I just thought, I'm going to get it back. A few months ago, I interviewed Times readers about them stealing their cars back.
Right.
And I think I was inspired by
that. You got the spirit. Well done.
Yeah.
So you and your mate arrive, and the friend, if I'm reading correctly, he sort of rides up one bicycle, but he's got yours by his side, effectively. Is that right?
Yes. Yeah. They're wheeling them together. And he said, I thought you were scamming me because I kept stalling him because I was waiting for the police.
Police,
I said,
yeah.
Oh no, I'm not scamming you, but this is the bike that you stole from me the other night. And he told me that he doesn't steal bikes, he buys and sells them.
Right, of course.
And and then he just, no questions asked, I said, I'm going to take this bike now if that's all right. And he said, yeah. And then he cycled away.
Did you give him his 80 quid, or you just said, I'm taking my bike back?
I just said, I'm taking my bike back. Didn't give him the 80 quid because, but I took it anyway, just in case he did demand it.
And he just accepted he'd been rumbled and cycled off. How extraordinary.
Yeah.
Well, credit to your friend. Now, what did your mum say when you told her the lengths you'd gone to get, if she, she'd have just said, it's a bike, for God's sake, love, don't worry about it.
Yeah, so I actually saw her, we went for dinner together, and I said, Mum, I'm going to get it back, it's fine. And she said, but don't do anything stupid, please, it's just, as you say, just a bike. But I was determined to get it back,
And have you bought a better lock? I'm sure the lock you had was great, but what extra precautions are you going to take?
Yes, I have bought a better lock.
Right.
And I actually haven't taken it, I haven't cycled anywhere with it that's not going, where it's not going to be locked up basically in Alcatraz.
Okay. Pardon my utter ignorance. Can you put trackers on bicycles? I know you can on motor cars. Can you do them on bikes or not?
I think you can. You can put an AirTag on them, which is the Apple thing. And but the thing is, the thief will clock on almost immediately because they'll just break it. A friend told me a trick to get a water bottle holder, put the AirTag in the water bottle holder, so it's not immediately obvious that the water bottle holder, and it's not immediately obvious that it's in there. So
congratulations, great story. Read all about it in today's Times. Safe Cycling, Ella Hodson, newsletter and daily briefing editor for the Times, with a big piece, chunky piece in the paper today. And there she is, back on her beloved bicycle. Well done, very brave. But should she have had to go to those lengths? We'll take your calls on that in a moment. A lot of people want to talk about prostate cancer. Joe's in Lewis in Sussex. Joe, you're on the radio. Good morning.
Good morning, Nick.
What can you tell me? Have you been diagnosed?
Yes, I was diagnosed 6 years ago.
Right.
Just had a few little minor niggly things. Went to the doctors. He said, well, you're probably a guy in your 50s. But I'd had two friends who'd had prostate cancer, and I luckily at the time had private health insurance. I said, can I get a private referral? Went to see Professor Ahmed at Imperial College, who is really the go-to guy. He said,
he's probably the guy. Him. He did my last check.
Fantastic, absolutely, yeah, the go-to guy.
Yeah.
He said, well, you're probably just a guy in your 50s. Any family history? I said, well, my grandfather actually died of it. He said, well, we'll just give you an MRI just to rule it out.
Yeah.
And that followed on with one of those, I'm sorry to tell you, conversations. I had the ultrasonic therapy, the HIFU therapy, which just targets just the area that where the tumour is.
Right.
6 years later, and I'm in my prime.
Oh, really. Good man. But, hey, how often do you have to have checkups, Joe?
I have a 6 monthly checkup, which just checks my PSA, which was only 3.1 prior to surgery, and is now 0.31. But the point I wanted to make is that guys don't get tested because of embarrassment. The prostate cancer exam is a joke.
You do it with blood. It's not the old-fashioned.
It's done with a blood test.
Yeah.
But people still think it's the, you know, put your trousers on the chair on top of mine.
By the way, Joe, did you know that wasn't particularly effective? I can't imagine they like doing it either. Yeah. Why the bloody hell were we doing it?
I know. And the PSA check, and you just get it done. And, you do wonder. I mean, you know, but we better not go into that on the radio.
Probably not. The important thing is you're well. Be well. Keep those checks going. Joe, thank you. Good to hear a positive story. Stephen in Chigwell. What's your story, Stephen? Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. Yes, I had prostate cancer about 15 years ago.
Right.
And it was quite interesting because I'm quite a fit guy. I play golf every day and I go training. So I went to see the doctor who happened to be a client of mine, a very good doctor.
Right.
He's my GP doctor. And I said, I need a PSA test. He said, well, why is that? You only had one 11 months ago. I said, I'm just getting up a bit more at night. And he said, okay, I don't think you need one, but go and have one. Anyway, when I came back for the results, he said to me, your PSA is 2.3, which obviously is very low, but it had gone from 1.6. And he said, that is the increase that we look at, is the red flag.
Right.
Not so much what your PSA is, but what it was a year earlier to what it is today.
Right.
So consequently, I went to have a checkup. I went to a specialist, had the normal HIFU like the gentleman before to have it all done. And he said, I was very lucky to have a GP that picked up on the percentage difference. But most doctors,
And how you're fine now? Everything under control?
Yeah, I had HIFU 15 years ago, like the previous gentleman. I had regular checkups.
Are you on 6 monthly checkups then, Stephen?
Yeah, 6 monthly PSA. I had my PSA done yesterday. It's 0.09.
Brilliant.
But it's very important for you guys out there listening that your PSA, speak to your doctor when he gives you the results to the increase from your previous one. That is the real difficult one, and a lot of doctors don't do it.
So now you're on 6 monthly checkups, and that's really effectively you've done, isn't it? You're sorted.
I'm really great. I
you said you were getting. I mean, how often were you getting up in the night to go to the toilet?
Probably 3 times.
All right.
You know, 3 times. Yeah. You know, during the night, and I went to see. And the other thing, the guys out there have got to... I put a lot of research into it, because obviously when you get told these things,
of course,
your mind plays tricks.
Yes.
And one specialist I went to said, you know, you've got three choices. You can either have your prostate out,
right,
you can either have radium treatment, or you can have watch and wait, which I really didn't fancy at all.
No, crikey, no.
I really didn't fancy that. But he never mentioned to me HIFU, and I found out all about this 15 years ago, because it was quite in its infancy then.
No, no, it's very common. Golf every day. What's your handicap?
4.
Whoa!
Not bad for a 70-year-old.
Wow, you're a very good golfer. Stephen, good luck. Have a good one next time you go out, if you're out on the links today. Stephen, thank you for that. We're going to talk bicycles. And also someone who managed to get their bike back after the 8:47 LBC news headlines. Thomas Watts.
Focus is shifting to the next steps of the US-led peace plan for Gaza. 4 in 10 hospices in England are planning to reduce or stop end-of-life care if they can't secure more funding. Authorities have recorded a 50% increase in highly significant cyber attacks against UK businesses. LBC weather, cloudy with light rain for many places, brighter skies in central Scotland, a high of 17 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Long delays on the M1 northbound to Junction 10 at Luton Airport. It's because of an accident where two lanes are closed. Very busy on the M25 clockwise to Junction 27 at the M11, and that was after that van broke down earlier. It's been recovered for a while, but it's still very slow. Long delays on the M2 both ways to Junction 6 at Faversham because of two separate accidents. And also, it's still very busy on the A3 northbound to Ockham Park, and that was after an accident that happened earlier. On the underground, there are minor delays on the Bakerloo line, but Elephant and Castle station has reopened, and Greater Anglia services are delayed by about half an hour between Liverpool Street and Witham.
This is LBC.
At Amazon, over 50% of deliveries now come with less packaging, or with no added packaging at all. It's a difference you'll notice on your doorstep, where you chat with friends, where your neighbour's daughter practices guitar, and where we deliver your new noise-cancelling headphones in the manufacturer's packaging. Ah, much better. Reduced packaging from Amazon. We're delivering change where it matters, on your doorstep. Based on 2024 UK and EU Amazon packaging data.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060973. LBC.
When BP asked me to read the voiceover for their new Wild Bean Cafe ad, I thought I knew what to expect. But when they told me I'd be reading the script next to a mountain waterfall, on horseback, strumming a harp, in a hailstorm, naked, ow, 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 ow. Well, that was wildly unexpected. Just like Wild Bean Cafe having a freshly ground signature espresso blend for everything from Americanos to flat whites in a fuel station. Wowzers. Wild Bean Cafe, only at BP. Subject to availability at selected BP stores only.
Hey, it's me, your dishwasher. I'm sorry about the chaos last night. I think a fork got jammed in my racks. Whoops. Don't even check the bills. I've overdone it. Don't get mad, okay, but I used up lots of power yesterday. Sometimes you just have to blow off some steam.
It can feel like all your energy does is take, take, take. But the longer you're with OVO, the more rewards you get. OVO, do energy differently. Beyond customers only, eligibility required, redemption limits apply.
A Southern train is a place where you can have more me time. A chance to skip traffic and glide to wherever you need to be. With headspace to focus on more important matters. Like if that cloud is a starfish or sunflower. Fast journeys without the rush with great deals at southernrailway.com. Terms apply.
Sharing intimate photos of her without her consent.
Unwanted touching. Unwanted comments. Unwanted nudes.
Controlling what she can and can't wear.
Controlling who she can and can't see.
Threatening her.
Enough. This is abuse.
If you think it's wrong, act on it.
Call it out, show support, report it.
There are many ways you can safely tackle violence against women and girls. Find out how at gov.uk/enough. If someone is in danger, call 999.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC with cybersecurity from BT. Solutions to help any size business stay protected.
9 minutes before 9. Let's pick up on the conversation we were having with the young woman who works for the Times newspaper. She's got a big piece in the paper today, by the way, if you want to catch up with all of that, about how she managed to retrieve her bike. She tracked it down through one of those websites. Sarah's in Lincoln. Now, this happened to your... Is it your son had his bicycle stolen? When was this? Good morning.
Yeah, it did, Nick. It was back in May. Good morning, by the way.
Hello.
So we have a tracker on my son's bike, and bless him, we'd only just bought it for him for his paper round, and then he went into...
Was he in his teens, your dad?
Yeah, he's 15.
15, right.
Went into the city, locked his bike up to go see his girlfriend perform in Panto. Oh, somebody's got the croppers to it, taking it. Oh. My husband and him set out on a mission to go and get that back.
Right.
And the chap that they challenged, it was lucky, actually, that my husband only half wound the window down because he was... he's actually outside what we now believe from the police was like a drugs house.
Oh, gosh.
But we, the whole time, for the 3 hours they were tracking it, they were in touch with Lincolnshire Police. Lincolnshire Police took well over an hour to kind of get to where we believe the bike was.
Right.
Obviously, they've got more important calls to go to. But within 12 hours, it was somewhere else in Lincoln. Within another 12 hours of that, it was in Oxford. We kept ringing the police to tell them where it was.
Yes.
And now it's in East Timor. But,
Your son's bicycle is in East Timor?
Yeah, it's in East Timor. The tracker, somehow they have not located the tracker under the seat.
Right.
But it went dead for 3 months. Well, sorry, around 10 weeks.
Right.
And we believe that's when it was in a container and shipping because it's linked to our 360. So we track my son on 360.
Right.
So wherever we are, any one of us in our cars, with our phones, we all know where we are and can actually pinpoint the last known location.
Yeah. Okay.
But if you drive past a 360 and it pings, then it will show a location. If no one in that area has 360, it won't ping. So someone in the East Timor must have 360 located near the bike.
How helpful were the police looking back on these events, would you say?
Well, so I can't speak statistically, and my husband is an ex-police inspector.
Ah.
But Lincoln in general, it's not for me to say, really. I think they have lots of far more serious things to go to.
Okay.
And so this is minimal. But I would like to ring them now and say it's in East Timor, but what are they going to do?
Nothing at all,
it could be a big drugs trafficking thing that they could uncover, but they've got other things that, it's...
How much was the bike worth?
So it was worth £240. We'd only had it for 3 weeks, and then we had to get him another one.
And you said this happened in May?
In May.
But you said your son went to see his girlfriend in, did you say in pantomime?
Yeah, no. So basically, Easter and summer, they have panto, but they have rehearsals.
Oh,
yeah,
I see.
She's at college doing dance, so
I see.
That's her way of rehearsing for a summer show.
All right.
Yeah.
And is the lad back on the paper round?
Well, he's moved on to a pizza place now.
Well, let's hope the bike, and he's got a good lock for it, has he?
Oh, yes. Yeah, triple lock now.
Triple lock. Let's hope he holds on to that one. Sarah, best wishes to him and to your husband. You did everything you possibly could. But as you say, there were probably greater crimes than going on, but it's very, very frustrating for you. Just coming up on 5 minutes before nine, we're talking about this major piece of work that's been put together by a prostate cancer charity that goes before the House of Commons today. The ultimate goal, screening for all men. Initially screening for men who are vulnerable, i.e. there's a history of it in the family, or black men who are more susceptible. Phillips and Solihull. Phil, what are you going to tell me? Good morning.
Hello, Nick, you wonderful man.
Oh, that's very sweet.
Thank you for highlighting this issue again. It's really important. So, and also I've got to thank my beautiful girlfriend as well for putting up with me.
Oh, so she sounds an absolute star. Should we have her first name?
Sheila, and I'm going to give her a big kissy moo-moo. Thank you very much.
There we go. Fantastic. There's Sheila's kissy moo-moo. Right. So tell me your story.
So I called you up just after my diagnosis a few days, and I was waiting for this issue to come up again on your radio before I called in.
Mm-hmm.
In the meantime, I've had my bone scan. That has come back all clear. It has not spread, which is great news.
That is very good news. Yeah, absolutely.
It is good news. And I literally just got the letter yesterday morning saying that I've got an appointment with the surgeon on the 17th of November, which is my girlfriend's birthday.
Oh, there we go. More kisses.
What
all
a day we're going to have.
Yeah.
At the Queen Elizabeth Hospital. Great.
Oh, fantastic. But so how long will it take? What will the surgery be?
So after that, the lovely lady Claire is... she's looking after me. She's going me through this journey of surgery, etc. She said it could be anywhere from 2 to 4 weeks after the initial meeting with this surgeon. So before Christmas.
That would be good to get it all done, wouldn't it? And then you just move through Christmas.
Be amazing.
And
I'm going to be off my feet for a bit, but I'll be better. And the screening needs to be done. Why isn't it done? Because I have no symptoms.
I don't know. And it's £18 a head. It is ludicrous. And quite rightly, and we celebrate the fact we do it for women with breast cancer. That is fantastic.
Yes,
I don't know why we can't do the same for the fellas. It's extraordinary.
I know.
All right, listen, give us a call again. If you don't call me before, give me a call when it's all done, just this side of Christmas, and we can celebrate together and give your partner, she sounds fantastic news, give her my best wishes. Philip, thank you. Sean's in Woodford. Sean, your story concerns your friend, is that right? Good morning.
Yes, good morning, Nick. it concerned my friend Monkey, is his nickname. He was my very close friend. He had no symptoms whatsoever until such time he started passing blood. Oh, he went to the doctors immediately, and unfortunately, he was told that he had it in the liver, the hips, and somewhere else, I can't remember now. Anyway, as a result of that, he had his treatment. That treatment went, and he had lost all of his hair, etc., etc. And sadly, he then got sepsis, unfortunately, he died of after about 9 months of horrendous treatment.
When was this?
It was only recently. He passed away probably about 2 months ago.
Oh, I'm sorry. But what age was he?
As a result of that, he was 72. As a result of that, we got involved with a charity called CHAPS, which is the a charity that is awareness, goes out there and makes men aware of what they should do and how often they should get on and do it. Mm. And consequently, we raised over £4,000 in his memory, and we're now going to hold an event once a year for men so that they can become aware of what they should do, when they should do it, and as soon as possible. Not just for over the 50s or whatever, but really anyone over the age of 40, just go and get a test, because you don't know how long it's going to take. And he had no symptoms at all.
Well, it's wonderful that you continue doing that in his honour. And it's such a sad that your mate didn't make it, but the legacy that you're providing really is great. Let's go a minute late, Sean, thank you. Stephen Westminster, go a minute late to the news, tell your story. You had it, is that right?
Yeah, I had it, Nick. I had robotic surgery, so I had it removed, but I had it done luckily on the NHS.
Right.
But I had it done at Princess Grace Hospital in Marylebone, so they basically saved me.
How long ago was this?
I've got my yearly blood test now, because I go from I went from 3 months the first year to 6 months the second year to the third year now. I've got my blood test in November,
Another 2 years. So how long ago was the surgery? Did you say 2 years ago?
3 years ago, 18th of October 2022. Fantastic. And I was lucky how it came across, because I literally went to my doctor to have a cholesterol check, and he asked me, was there anything else I should tell him? And I said, yeah, there is. I'm waking up in the nights with sweats. And that's why they sent me for a full blood test.
And that's when they discovered it. Fantastic that your doctor moved so quickly. Congratulations. The anniversary next month, I'm sure, and I hope, and I'm sure it will go well. Steve, thank you. The music means we must move on. And we move on with the housing crisis, particularly in London. Housing Secretary Steve Reid.
It's absolutely shocking, the failure to get house building going. It's not just in London, it's across the whole country.
But London is perhaps the most dramatic decline, and I'll share those figures with you. Plus the research that shows that six in ten parents say it's fine for children to start school. Still wearing nappies? News on LBC is next.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 9 o'clock, President Trump says he is focused on rebuilding Gaza after signing a US-led ceasefire deal. Attention is shifting to the future of the territory after yesterday's exchange of Israeli hostages and Palestinian detainees. But Mr. Trump has declined to commit to a two-state solution. He spoke to reporters on board Air Force One on his way back from a peace summit in Egypt.
We're talking about rebuilding Gaza. I'm not talking about single state or double state or two state. We're talking about the rebuilding of Gaza.
what's the road ahead for governing?
Well, we're going to have to see. I mean, a lot of people like the one-state solution. Some people like a two-state solution. So we'll have to see. I haven't commented on that.
More than 12,000 terminally ill patients in England are at risk of losing access to hospice care. Figures shared with LBC show 40% of hospices are looking at reducing or stopping services without more funding in the next 6 months. Alison Bennett is the Lib Dems care spokesperson.
There is this awful postcode lottery. There's rising costs. Government support hasn't kept pace with it. And beds and staff are closing or being let go. And that means that people are not having the dignified death, they're not having the best possible care they can.
The Department of Health says it's investing a record £100 million in improving hospice facilities. Major businesses have been urged to take immediate action to protect themselves from cyber attacks. The National Cybersecurity Centre recorded a 50% increase in highly significant incidents in the year to the end of August. Resilience advice includes being able to fall back on pen and paper if IT systems are taken offline. Figures show earnings growth has eased again and unemployment is up. The main jobless rate rose to 4.8% in the 3 months to August, its highest level in more than 4 years. Official figures also show another fall in job vacancies. Wales and Northern Ireland both suffered losses in World Cup qualifying last night. Craig Bellamy's side lost 4-2 to Belgium in Cardiff, and Northern Ireland were beaten 1-0 by Germany in Belfast. England would secure their place at the tournament with a win over Latvia in Riga tonight. In the city, the FTSE 100, a short time ago, was trading at 94.14. That is down 28. The pound buys $1.32 and a euro 14. LBC weather, cloudy with light rain for many places, brighter skies in central Scotland, a high of 17 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watt.
Why am I leaving a gift in my will to Cancer Research UK? After my wife Pam died from bowel cancer, I did everything to contribute to today's research, and now I can help fund the discoveries of tomorrow. Whilst Pam never met her grandchildren, leaving a legacy means that even when I'm not here, I can make a difference to their lives.
Gifts in Wills fund a third of our work, helping us develop life-changing cancer research. Visit cruk.org/giftsinwills. Together we are beating cancer.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Morning, 3 minutes after nine on Tuesday, the 14th of October. Coming up in this hour, we go back to the conversation I was having with the Housing Secretary. They're launching a new initiative in which they say they will unshackle local authorities. They will get Britain building. But I shared with Steve Reid the shocking decline in the number of new houses or apartments or flats being actually changing hands in London. The numbers are pitiful, particularly when given the promise after promise that we've had from the London Mayor, Sir Sadiq Khan. In other news, the shocking report that says that 60% of parents, or 6 out of 10, say it's okay for their children to start school still wearing nappies. Author of Potty Training Magic, Amanda Jenner, says parents should be kept making sure that their kids are out of nappies before they go to school.
Don't just stay trapped in the house because it's not normal. And children have to get used to going in and out the house. That's why we're having all this fearfulness of going to the toilet at school.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
That is what you get, that collapse in parenting if you indulge parents. Oh, we'll get someone to teach their children how to brush their teeth. We'll get someone to teach their children how to do that. It's not the parents' fault. They need help. They need education. No, they don't. And it's not right for the child. Think of the embarrassment for the child as well. Soiling themselves at school, a primary school. This isn't nursery. Anyway, we're going to have more on that a little bit later. Into that housing story that I mentioned. Now, the government are very excited about what they call as the Landmark Planning and Infrastructure Bill. New powers that would allow the Secretary of State, with whom I discussed this, to reject councils trying to stop planning permissions. Believe that. Tackle blocks in court. Plans to accelerate the building of reservoirs, wind farms and large housing schemes. They talk of turbocharging the plan for change. This is, as you can tell from their press release, to create high-paying jobs, put money into people's pockets and secure more homegrown clean energy. Dear, oh dear. Well, if you look at London, particularly London, it has a key role to play. You will remember this government says it will roll out 1.5 million homes in its lifetime, in its 5 years, of which 440,000 are meant to be built in London, and his few occasions in which the mayor, Sir Sadiq Khan, has talked of this.
London, we're building record numbers of homes to help end the housing crisis, and we've built more new homes in recent years than at any time since the 1930s.
I set out to deliver the homes Londoners needed and could actually afford. 9 years later, I'm proud of the progress we've made.
I look forward to supporting the ambitions of this government to address London's acute housing need and to working with the local boroughs to ensure that the proposed new towns create fantastic communities where Londoners can live healthy, fulfilling lives.
And here is the reality. That was the mayor speaking in October 2023, May of this year, and early this month. And the reality is, as was revealed in the Evening Standard last week, that the number of new properties, new homes, that what they call changed hands in May, the last month for which figures were available, was 19. Prior to that, it was 23. And even at the worst time in the recession, the lowest the number ever got to in history was 367. So I don't quite know where all these assurances are going, but what is the reality? Well, I shared those figures with the Housing Secretary, Steve Reid.
It's absolutely shocking, the failure to get house building going. It's not just in London, it's across the whole country. And it's because of what the previous government... They scrapped house building targets, so local authorities were no longer expected to build homes. They introduced new regulation that added years of delay to getting the schemes going. And if you do that, you end up with a situation where you just get 19 sales in London in 1 month. The package of reforms I'm announcing today will deal with part of that, but I'm going to come back on your show in a few weeks' time with the Mayor of London and announce an acceleration package specifically looking at what has gone wrong in London so that we can correct that and get house building going here again.
But shouldn't the Mayor have been doing more before this? This has been going on for months now. London has fallen off a cliff as regard house
sales. It wasn't the Mayor that introduced those new regulatory burdens. It was a previous Conservative government. It wasn't the Mayor that scrapped house building targets. It was the previous Conservative
government. But he's allowed
government.
To maintain targets in London. He and often talks about house building as a priority, and it's not been, has it?
If you look at what the boroughs are doing, Bromley Council, which is controlled by the Conservatives, 95% behind their new house building target. Compare that with Newham, a Labour-run borough, which is ahead of their target. So I can see who the builders are, I can see who the blockers are, but I want the Mayor of London to have more power to make Conservative-run boroughs build the homes that people there need.
Someone sent a note to Steve Reid. The likelihood of the mayor coming on this show is at best fairly remote. Right, let's turn to a property expert, David Gammon, who regularly helps us with matters such as these. David, good to have you on. What is the reality as regards the numbers, the targets that have been set, and the targets that have been lamentably missed? Good morning, David.
Morning, Nick. Great to have a target, I suppose, but they're not going to get anywhere close to them, unfortunately. London is a huge challenge at the moment. It's incredibly quiet. It's incredibly difficult. But what we probably need to do is accept the fact that the London purchasers are, in fact, mainly international. And we should encourage that rather than discouraging it. And by discouraging it with extra taxation and making it much more difficult for them to purchase, we've decimated the market at the moment.
What are the reasons that people aren't buying, that Londoners or people in the UK aren't buying in London?
So I think if they're looking at infrastructure and a way of life that they want for their families and their children, so they're going to look outside, and they're always going to look to get to the suburbs of London to improve their living standards, and therefore it's just so expensive in London. The problem is they can any targets they like. They can talk about world-class crash barriers through the planning system and turbocharging this and that. The last government the same. It's no different. They don't really have the will to do it, and that's the problem.
What is the reality, as you see it, as regards Sir Sadiq Khan's promises for house building in London?
You've got more chance of coming on your show than increasing the house building in London. That's the problem. It's interesting that he suggests those figures there suggest that Newham is actually leading the race for new construction. That may be because it's a rather depressed area of London in terms of price point, building costs, land values, and so on. Land values are so expensive and they haven't come down. Build costs are so expensive and they're not going to come down. Planning is the same as it ever was. Let's hope they can really, really push through it and improve the planning situation. It's tough at the minute. It's really tough.
We've been talking probably for the best part of about 10 years about the housing game. Is this the most sluggish you've ever seen it, David?
I've got to be a little bit careful. I've got a living to make to get out there and continue selling flats. It is difficult. It is difficult. And we're all having to be a little bit creative as to what incentives we offer to try and get purchasers through the door. The figures for 19 for May are quite interesting because I think I did half a dozen, so I'm quite pleased about that.
Well done. You talk about selling to foreign investors. That's where the appetite is. That's where the market is. But how does that help us with prices and Brits or Londoners buying in London or other areas?
I think it's got to improve the trickle down effect, hasn't it? It's the same as every economy in terms of if you improve the purchasers purchasing at the top of the market, you've got a chance for the first time buyers to get on the ladder and push it through. The problem we've also got now currently is we have a budget at the end of November. I'm not sure if that's unprecedented, but it's incredibly late. People are sitting on their hands waiting to see if there's going to be what's going to happen to capital gains, what's going to happen to stamp duties, is there going to be an exit tax? So they're doing nothing. And then, of course, the next excuse will be, oh, it's nearly Christmas.
Yes, of course. I think there's one other budget that's almost as late in November, but this is the latest, certainly, in living memory. So you're absolutely right on that. Okay, lastly, you've been through probably as many bonfires of red tape and planning objections to be pushed aside as I have. They always seem to come to nothing, David.
Well, there's got to be a will to get it done, and they actually need to go back and start again almost on the whole planning and infrastructure laws. Maybe they should get some property experts involved rather than ministers without portfolio who don't really seem to know what they're doing. David, that would be a great start.
David Gamble, property expert, great as ever speaking with you. Thanks, David. 12 minutes after 9. Let's bring into the conversation Maxwell Marlowe, who's Director of Policy at the YIMBY Initiative. And we need to start by asking, what is the YIMBY Initiative? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Yes, the YIMBY Initiative is a new stinking do tank that's been set up to deal with exactly the problems you are discussing on your show today. We're trying to get more houses built.
Where?
In London, it would be fantastic, and there are reasons why, fundamentally, the government is struggling so much. Primarily, it's down to the Building Safety Regulator in London. So if you take the way in which you get approved housing, we've only had 29 approvals through this regulator in the past 3 years to get high-rise buildings built. That's only 29 in 3 years, Nick.
What typically are the grounds? Is it local objections that they get turned down?
No, it's down to the way in which the regulator works. So you have to send in all of the documents that are involved in the planning, the financing, the construction of the regulator, and then it will manually, by hand, bureaucrats will then go through line by line every single one of those documents until it is happy. So that is why we have had so few approvals that have gone through the system correctly. I've been working on a paper. I've got a foreword from every single major party, apart from the Greens, that are endorsing a complete reform of the Building Safe Regulator because...
But we want safe buildings, Maxwell.
Well, of course we need safe buildings, Nick. That's absolutely true. But we also can't have people living in unsafe buildings. So therefore, if we have a regulator which stops the building of safe buildings, that means we have people living in unsafe buildings. And we're also just not building the houses we need. No wonder the housing crisis is so fierce.
How do you handle local objections?
Local objections, that's a separate problem. So the targets can be used to force through planning decisions. That doesn't include the building, which the BSR deals with. The issue we've got are S106 agreements, Section 106, which is an agreement between the council and the developer, which essentially allows the developer to pay the council some money to provide social housing, provide local amenities. Those are also at loggerheads at the moment, and we see that across councils. It's really gumming up the planning system.
Maxwell Marlowe is Director of Policy at the YIMBY Initiative. YIMBY, as in NIMBY, but YIMBY, yes, in my backyard. Thank you for coming on, Mr. Marlowe. Well, it is the dream of many, not everybody, but probably most, actually, to own their own home. Not all of you, I know, but many of you. And it's a tremendous feeling as and when you can. But what about the problems in the market? We'll hear your stories right after the 9:15 LBC News headlines. Thomas Watts.
President Trump has declined to commit to a two-state solution after signing the US-led ceasefire deal for Gaza. More than 12,000 terminally ill patients in England are at risk of losing access to hospice care because of funding shortfalls, and major businesses have been urged to take immediate action to protect themselves from cyber attacks. LBC weather, cloudy with light rain for many places, a bit brighter in central Scotland, a high of 17 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Long delays on the M2 both ways to Junction 6 at Faversham. And that was after two separate accidents. All the lanes have opened on both sides, but there are still delays of about half an hour. One lane's closed on the M3 southbound at Junction 4 at Camberley. That's where a car's broken down. In Kennington, there are delays because the Harleford Road is blocked westbound at Durham Street, and that's following an accident. Severe delays on the A4 eastbound in Chiswick to the Hogarth roundabout. A van's broken down. And there are delays of about 40 minutes back onto the elevated section of the M4. In Notting Hill, St Anne's Road is partially blocked both ways. It's because of an ongoing police investigation.
This is LBC.
It's me, again, to remind you that tonight's Euro Millions jackpot is £14 million.
Which means it's time to play the song. Again! Get in tonight's Euro Millions draw. Play on app.
Estimated jackpot. Account terms, rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. This is LBC.
A Thames Link train is a place where you can have more me time. A chance to recharge yourself and your phone. To stretch out, sit back, and when you hear "all change, please," you'll know you already have. Go with your flow with great deals at thameslinkrailway.com. Terms apply.
Angela Rippon, what are you doing here?
I've come to tell you about using energy flexibly, Albert.
Flexibly?
Yes, smart meter owners could get rewarded for moving their energy use, like doing the laundry at off-peak times.
So I don't need to do the splits?
No, Albert, nobody wants to see that.
Get rewarded for using energy flexibly, only with a smart meter. Search Get a Smart Meter today.
Eligibility and availability vary. Consumer action required. Reward schemes and tariffs available to selected customers from selected suppliers.
With an Amex business card, Selena's earning points renovating her skin clinic and refreshing the builders.
14 coffees and 28 sugars, please.
And on new adjustable chairs for every room. And she can use the points to lie back and relax.
Don't put ice cream on your brother's head.
Well, sometimes. And that's because with an Amex business card, your points can go towards holidays and more.
Search Amex business card. Terms and annual fees apply. 18 plus. Subject to status. Basic card also available with no annual fee, rewards or other features.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC with cybersecurity from BT. Protect your small business and understand cybersecurity.
Tober charging the housing industry. You've heard it before. What will the reality be? Dave's in Harrogate. Dave, you're on the radio. What's going to happen in this one, do you think? Good morning.
Good morning. I think the main issue here is everyone's missing the point. It's all very well getting planning permission, but if you haven't got enough people to actually build the houses in the first place, then how on earth are you going to do it?
We haven't got enough build. Do you hear not enough builders out there?
I'm sorry, say again?
Sorry, are there not enough builders out there, people actually doing the building?
No, there's not enough plasterers, decorators, plumbers, joiners, decorators. It's totally a broken system, so there are not enough people to actually build the houses, even though you might get planning permission. The other aspect...
Just to check, you are in the industry, are you?
Well, I was in the industry for 45 years,
oh,
yeah.
Oh, right, okay.
So, you know, land values now are worth a lot less than they were 10 years ago, so people are not wanting to sell their land because build costs have gone up massively, particularly timber and steel and bricks. So therefore, we've got that push. We've got 40 to 50% affordable housing. So every 10 houses we build, either four or five of them are affordable properties. So you get full value for six, but you get minimal value for four, which can knock out your profit. It just doesn't work. And build costs are so high that arguably builders will start to use cheaper materials. You know, it really is quite a broken system.
How long were you in this industry?
Well, I was in it for about 40 years, one way or another, yeah.
So what were your advice sought, as David Gamble was saying, it might be an idea for the government to actually talk with people who've been in the industry. Had your advice been sought, what would you have told them?
Well, I would have told them to go and speak to the chief execs of the large PLCs to start with. That would be the obvious thing to do, who could then explain the difficulties. I mean, if you're trying to make 20 or 25% profit on a building site, are you going to push the button to build 500 houses at the moment when there's no end market? I mean, your shareholders will be up in arms.
No, you can't do that. Why are people not going into the building trades?
Well, I think there are too many people going to university and getting degrees that we don't want. And, you know, from my point of view, if somebody trains to be a plumber or a joiner, they'll probably earn more money in the first year than they ever would do as a solicitor.
I mean, of course, yeah.
You know, so I think we need to think more about where do we start the process. Getting planning permission on appeal is one thing, but if you do it and you bypass the local authority, then what you're going to get is poor decisions or design.
And you know. Were you involved in building houses or selling houses, or what was it you did?
Well, both, but, you know, I did work with the large PLCs for many years and the large house builders. And, yeah, I do accept that they can make a lot of money, but the trouble is they're being squeezed in every direction. Too high a land value, too high build costs, too high labour costs, and it just doesn't work. And if they make 40% of properties affordable, or 50 in some locations in the country, it just wipes out your profit.
And what is the impact, as you see it, of foreigners buying housing stock?
I think everybody should have the right to buy a house. But I do think that the difficulty is that if you buy a house, Nick, and the house next door to you is exactly the same as your house, but somebody gets it at full market value and a large mortgage to go with it, and then somebody has exactly the same house next door, and due to difficult circumstances, I accept, may get it on an affordable rent or a reduced value. I mean, to give you some idea, in the area that I operate, affordable housing attracts about £103 per square foot for each property. Mm-hmm. If you were selling it to the open market, it would be over £400 a square foot.
Is that the differential? My gosh.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And it costs probably between £200 and £250 a square foot to build it. So if you do the maths, it's quite clearly doesn't work.
Dave, thank you for all your input on that. We'll continue this conversation with Adrian. You'll be the next caller, and Philip as well. But I have mentioned this story, and I want to just get into it now because I have the opportunity to be able to speak to a psychologist. And this is the survey that shows that 6 in 10 parents, or 60%, do not think their children or child needs to be toilet trained before starting school. This is government polling reveals a crisis in preschool readiness. 64% of parents think their youngsters do not need to be able to focus on a task for 10 minutes before starting formal education at 4 years of age. 70% say it's unimportant for their children to know how to use a knife and fork. So 7 out of 10 don't think their children should be able to eat with a knife and fork. 6 out of 10 don't think they should be toilet trained before going to school. Who would be a primary school teacher? They don't spend their years training to be a teacher so they can change your child's nappy. Joe Hemmings is a behavioural psychologist. What lies behind this, Joe? Morning.
Good morning, Nick. It's pretty shocking, isn't it?
Yep.
And I think it's a relatively recent thing. I certainly have two children of my own. I would have been appalled if they had gone to school.
Yep.
In nappies. I do know it takes a little longer to get children out of nighttime nappies. We're talking daytime nappies here.
Right.
So this is a lack of potty training. It is not teachers' responsibility. It is teachers' responsibility to teach, not to yeah. change nappies. I mean, obviously some children do have certain developmental delays or whatever.
Yeah, but we're not talking about those poor kiddies.
No, we're talking about
regular yeah. children, or whatever word we can use.
I mean, I hesitate to use the word laziness or sort of deferring responsibility elsewhere.
But it is laziness.
But I think that's what's going on. They just think, well, it's fine. Teachers will change it. Some parents have a very open-minded view that when their children are ready, they'll be ready. They won't encourage them to use the potty any earlier. But it all adds up to, you know, schools need to make it very clear, I think, that your child will not be able to start in school if they are still in daytime nappies.
Yep.
You know, it's got to be an expectation that's put onto the parents to do their job properly.
Can you recall from raising your two children, what sort of age would you be daytime dry?
I would say daytime dry about two and a half daytime dry,
and then
maximum.
Yeah, and then hopefully
and possibly three at night. But they, even when they went to nursery, and they both went to nursery at three, they were dry, I think, day and night. And I'd taken some care to ensure that that happened.
Education Secretary Bridget Phillipson has said, we're stepping in to make things simpler and clearer, giving parents access to trusted expert advice so their children are ready to learn. I mean, I find that an extraordinary suggestion, but what might that advice look like, do you imagine, Jo?
Well, I mean, it is up to parents to teach their children to be able to take a pee or whatever without a nappy on. I mean, I know nappies have evolved so that, you know, you can keep them on for longer. But, you know, I really do think it's like cleaning your teeth. It's using the knife and fork. It's the basic little independences that children must learn before they go to school in order to integrate. So I think it's quite distressing for the child. If they are,
if they soil themselves in front of their classmates age 4 or 5, that's going to look horrific for the poor child.
Yeah, it is. It's quite traumatising, I would say, at that age. So if that pushes parents towards doing something about it, then so much the better.
Jo Hemmings is a behavioural psychologist. Thanks for your time. Julie, you'll be speaking about that. We'll talk about housing. But just for a second, this is what happens if you infantilise parents. My kid can't brush his teeth. We'll send someone round. We'll get the teeth. We'll go into school and show children how to brush their teeth. No. 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 To quote the late Margaret Thatcher. No, that's the parents' job. The same as eating with a knife. We'll send counsellors into schools. Counsellors, not counsellors. Counsellors. Into schools to show children how to use a knife and fork. No. 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 Because again, you infantilise the parents. It is the parents' job to show children how to use a knife and fork. It is the parents' or parent job to show a child how to brush his, her, their teeth. It's the parents' or parent role to make sure that their child is toilet trained. You cannot, and this is what happens if you take away all responsibility. More on that in a moment with Julie. Adrian's in Newbury. I've been talking about council laws. You're a councillor, aren't you? Is that right? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Yes, I am a councillor. We're head boy Sparks, a district councillor, yeah.
OK, so you see many applications, I would imagine, come before the...
Since 2019, I've been sitting on both district planning and Western Area planning. So
what have you learned about the industry and that fairly crucial role?
Well, that getting permission to build, there's 1.2 million, I think it is, since 2015, homes that have been granted planning permission,
right,
but have not yet started construction. So I don't see it as an issue of the councillors blocking and things of that nature. I sit on those council decision-making bodies. We don't block unless we really should be blocking, according to the MPPF. What I see is that once permission is given, they're not built.
Why is
and
that?
And if you solve that the various reasons it appears, delays in discharging planning conditions, financing of market uncertainty, infrastructure or utility constraints, things that need to be ticked off, like, I don't know, has Thames Water got the ability to take all the new sewage that's going to come out of the housing estate? There's all sorts of reasons why it doesn't go ahead, but focusing on councils and councillors not giving enough permission to build is not the place to focus. The place is unblocking the rest and getting everything moving again.
Lastly, as someone who works in the field, how would you clear the hurdles or try and unblock the system?
I don't have that answer because I'm not an expert in that area, so I can't answer that, Nick, sorry.
All right, Adrian, thanks for the experience that you have got. Let's talk toilet training with Julie in Hemel Hempstead. Julie, primary school children not being toilet trained, your reaction to that? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. I'm a long-time listener, first-time caller, so I'm a little bit nervous.
Oh, there's nothing to be nervous about. Go ahead.
Thank you for taking my call. I've got two boys. They're now 17 and 18. First one was easy to toilet train. My youngest child has a diagnosis of autism, so as a lot of parents will be aware,
right,
with children who have that diagnosis, it can be difficult to toilet train, but I did manage to get him toilet trained before he was 3.
Right.
It was a priority for me because I thought it was important that when he went to school that he could use the toilet and he was able to keep up with his peers. So for me, it was a priority. I know that it's not always that easy for other parents. I was fortunate to be able to be, I was working part-time at the time, so...
What would you say to parents who think it's all right to send their children into school not being trained?
I just think they try and make it a priority. I know it's difficult. People have busy lives, juggling.
Well, there's nothing more important than your child, is there? Let's be honest about it, however busy you might be.
And I have to agree with the other, the brushing of the teeth. I mean, I used to have to brush my child's teeth for for quite a while, but I thought that that was important, and eventually he took over and did that himself, and also the eating as well with the knife and fork. I think it's just trying to be consistent and regularly making the time to do these things.
Do you agree with me that if you, I use the expression again, infantilize parents, if you say that we'll send people in to teach their children how to use a knife and fork into primary school, they're not going to do it themselves? And this is what, this is the upshot of all those sort of policies.
I think it's important that it comes from home, from the carers, to be able to teach their children those sorts of skills. I don't think that people should be going into school to teach children what should be coming from home.
Totally agree with you. Best wishes to your children, Julie. Thank you. Well done for what you've done. Philip on housing, more calls on regarding this survey concerning the potty parents who aren't potty training their children. More on that to come. 9:31, breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari on LBC. News time now, Thomas Watts.
Donald Trump says he is focused on rebuilding Gaza after signing a US-led ceasefire deal. Attention is now shifting to the future of the territory after yesterday's exchange of Israeli hostages and Palestinian detainees. 4 in 10 hospices in England are planning to reduce or stop end-of-life care if they can't secure more funding in the next 6 months. Figures shared with LBC by the Lib Dems show more than 12,000 terminally ill patients could be affected. A record number of serious cyber attacks in the UK has been recorded in the last year. Authorities say Chinese and Russian hackers have contributed to the 50% increase in highly significant incidents. LBC weather, cloudy with light rain for many places, brighter skies in central Scotland, a high of 17 degrees.
This is LBC.
Okay, this kitchen table office situation isn't working anymore. My home office needs to feel less making do and more CEO of my own corner.
Right. Wayfair it is.
Exactly. A proper desk to spread out on, a comfy ergonomic chair, and a stylish lamp that makes video calls a little brighter.
With furniture and decor for every style and budget, Wayfair turns your home dreams into reality. Just one tap to get it out of your head and into your home. Download the Wayfair UK app and shop now.
The click of the indicator. A rhythm that shifts your focus from the day's work to the journey that's truly yours. With a range of spacious SUVs like the CR-V, you've got the room to handle the daily chaos, which makes those big adventures feel that much closer. Because every journey matters. Book a test drive at Yeoman's Honda today. Honda, the power of dreams.
Imagine the varifocal lens of the future, personalized to you, engineered with artificial intelligence and powered by your visual behavior. Experience instantly sharp vision in motion with Varilux XR Pro lenses from Essilor. Find your local optician at Essilor.com and ask for Varilux XR Pro.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC with cybersecurity from BT. Security solutions built for businesses.
I'm going to come and talk to you, Philip, about housing in just a moment, and plenty of calls coming in on toilet training. We're going to give you one other story concerning your children, which is how one London borough, Merton, has decided that parents will be banned from attending their children's sporting events after incidents of bad behaviour from watching adults. They run various events, physical participation events, across 40 primary schools in the borough, which takes in areas such as Wimbledon and Morden. And last week, the Merton School Sport Partnership wrote to parents say they would no longer be welcome at sports events. This, by the way, include events such as football, hockey tournaments and gymnastic championships. This follows instances, in some cases, of parents deliberately blocking children trying to do in a running race. So actually move... These are primary school children. So their child is presumably coming second. So mum or dad just gets in the way of the kid who's winning the race. That's extraordinary. Abusive behaviour towards referees or other officials, many of whom are secondary school pupils. So a 15-year-old boy or girl is going to ref a hockey game or something, and mum and dad start screaming at them. This is extraordinary. The decision has not been taken lightly, they say. But some parents have been coaching children despite not being the coach, challenging organisers and officials around the rules and decisions. Oh, this is bad, actually, and putting photos online without parental consent. Well, you can't do that, particularly if children are doing gymnastics. That's wrong. Now, these school sports partnerships are an innovation that came in the years of Tony Blair. And the idea of sporting activities delivered across multiple schools to increase the quantity of physical education. But they've got so difficult in Merton with so much abuse and the blocking of children running a race that parents are no longer invited. It's been a long, long, long time since I stood pitch side watching various football games and hockey and basketball and all sorts of things. And what's the worst I ever did? I might have rolled my eyes or maybe said, not loud, whoa, what, a penalty? Good grief. But I'd never dream of start shouting at any of the kids involved or indeed the ref. I always make a point of going over and thanking the ref, actually. It was a hell of a horrible thing to have to do. So what are the bad examples that you've seen? Have you actually seen someone block a child's path because they'll win the race and the other kid presumably is in second? Do share your sports day stories. Bad sports. You're all being bad sports, I should say. Share your stories on that. But we're off to Switzerland now, to Zurich and Philip. Philip, what can you tell us about the housing business back here in the UK? Good morning.
I'm just interested to know how, with all these claims, how the government intends to deal with the infrastructural side of building.
You're in the business.
All these houses, but sewage, telecoms, water, how do they... It's woeful investment over the last 10, 20 years, and now they want to build all these houses. How are they going to connect them up? They don't have already enough capacity.
Well, now, tell me what you do. You're in the business in some sort, are you?
I was a long time ago, but I watch from afar, and I see how it works in places like Switzerland and in Austria and Hungary, and they think about infrastructure first and then build houses. It seems we are the other way around.
Well, talk us through the difference in doing a development, say, in Switzerland as opposed to doing one in Swindon.
Well, they would have... It's a difficult comparison, really, but let's say they would have looked at how much water capacity they have, how much sewage capacity they have, and then work on the planning of how they should then build on top of that. It seems that the Labour government just spend their time soundbiting how they're going to build all these houses and just look at Thames Water. They're just about to go into bankruptcy, probably.
Yes.
You know, electric, so you live in London, you know full well that nothing really works. So you explain to me how this is going to work.
Well, I don't see how it can, and every expert I've turned to seems to find a fresh set of holes in it.
Well, I'd like the mayor, if you do actually get him onto your show.
He won't do me. He won't talk to me.
Of course he won't, but let's say he did, oddly enough. It's a question that really needs to be asked, because Thames Water, fundamental to all of it, is it coming into bankruptcy? Probably.
Yes, or bailout.
How do you invest all that money in building houses and then not have a sewage ability or water ability? Makes no sense.
None at all. You live now in Switzerland, or you're there in business?
No, I live here.
You live here. Anything you miss about UK?
Yes, a lot. But mostly I miss about the UK is what the UK used to be. Today, not where it was. That's a sad thing, really.
Sorry, the UK used to be what? More dynamic country? What is it?
Well, I think, you know, London... I mean, we talk about coming back, but a lot of my friends don't go to London anymore because they're worried about crime.
Yeah.
They're worried about, you know, these are things that shouldn't be the case. They were never the case when I was growing up, and now we are where we are. So, yeah, it's a real shame.
Philip, enjoy life in Zurich. It's a city I've known moderately well. It's a super place. Be well. But let's say, we have to be fair, there has always been crime in London. Let's pretend it's not that we, you know, you go back to the housing days where there's always been crime, and there's always been violent crime. But I have to say, the fact that you could get, has the case been before the courts, let's say allegedly fatally stabbed for your watch, just in case it's not been dealt with yet, you can get allegedly fatally stabbed for your watch in Knightsbridge. That didn't used to happen. And gangs come using mopeds and scooters to nick your phone out of your hand. Again, that is the sort of thing that I think Philip's referring to. Let's pick up on the idea. Coming to you, Angela, to talk children in just a moment. This is Marie in Putney. I recommend watching the TV show Motherland. It's hilarious. The episode that does the school sports day is comedy gold. I think I've seen that one. Doesn't someone's mother get involved and has a heart attack or something? Same subject. This comes in from Anthony. Sports day for my kids. This is ridiculous. There's no winners. They have to allow everyone to win. That's absurd. Guess what? In life, some people win, some people don't win. And it's good to start equipping children with the fact that you're not always going to win every not that I ever won any race. You're going to win every race you take part. It's just a fact of life. Angela's in Greenwich to talk about these parents who send their children to primary school without having toilet trained them. It's pretty grim, isn't it, Angela? Good morning.
It's absolutely ridiculous. I think it may be because mothers go back to work so soon, so it's easier to put a disposable nappy on and send them to nursery like that, or whoever's looking after them. But I sat my kids on the pots, on their pot, as soon as they could sit properly.
Right. How old would that... Just remind me, it's been so long since my children were that age. How many... What sort of age would they be?
Probably 7 or 8 months old.
Right, OK.
And you just sort of sit them on the pot and go... or bit of a grunt, just so that they get the idea. And
right.
It doesn't take very long at all.
Right. Why is it that so many children then are not getting this? Why, you think it's because mums go back to work?
I do think that has something to do with it. But for some reason, I mean, I've heard several mothers say, they'll know when they want to do that.
Mm.
And really, you've got a sort of, I'm not saying an empty vessel, but you've got a child there
mm-hmm.
that has to be taught everything, and I don't understand it. I see quite a few babies that are, you know, 3, maybe 4, and they're still trotting about in nappies, and I don't understand it.
Terrible, isn't it? Angela, thank you. Back to behaviour on the sports fields. Gavin in Merthyr Tydfil. My son started refereeing football at 15 and has to wear an armband to state he is under 18. On more than one occasion, he's had fully grown adults threatening to storm the pitch as he's given calls against their children. He's now decided to give up on his dream of becoming a top-class referee. That's awful. And I think, Gavin, that's exactly what's been happening in Merton, because they say that in many instances it's secondary school pupils who are being abused by adult, well, obviously adult parents, being abused by adult parents because they don't like the decisions that have been taken in a hockey match. Staying with children and toilet training, Maureen's in Sunderland. Maureen, what can you tell me? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Thank you for taking my call. I'm the mother to 5 boys.
Oh, boy.
My first.
Wow. What's the age range, Maureen?
Oh, no, they're all grown up. I'm 78.
Oh, right. Okay. Oh, right.
How
many grandchildren you got?
Oh, 12 and 6 great-grandkids.
Oh, my goodness me. It's busy Christmas around your house. My God.
I hate Christmas. I'm still working to pay for Christmas.
Oh,
never mind.
Poor woman. Oh, God. Right.
Anyway, regards potty training.
Yes, Maureen.
When my first two were twins, and I thought, oh, after a couple of weeks, and I thought, oh, God, I can't do this with this, all this dirty nappies.
Mm.
But as soon as the cord comes, about a fortnight, I think now, from remembering back before, the cord drops off. But as soon as that happened, I sat them on the put one up. I sat them on an old towel on my knee, took their nappies off.
Right.
And when you were feeding them.
Yes.
And then when you sit them up to wind them, sat them over the potty.
Right,
and
okay.
I've done it with all of my boys and my twins. They were slightly a bit longer to train, being 2 of them. They were 13 months old when they were clean.
Right.
But my other 3 boys, they were all clean under a year.
What would you say to mums, and indeed dads, who haven't done this training when their children go to primary school?
I think it's disgusting, absolutely disgusting. They just haven't got a clue, the parents these days. They're thick and they're stupid and they're ignorant.
Well, I don't know that every parent is thick, stupid and ignorant.
No, not all of them, but a lot of them. Especially where I live, there's a lot of them like that. There are some nice people out there.
Right.
Don't get me wrong, I'm not condemning everybody, but... I can see it, you know, like...
What is it? You tell me what you see, Maureen, when you say you can see it. What is it you see?
Well, it's the mothers are all huge. The kids are all huge, size-wise, I'm talking about.
Right.
Their language is disgusting.
Right.
The kids just run riot. They're
and was it like that when you were raising your sons?
No, not. No, no.
Why has it gone like this, would you
say?
I
mean, you always have some like that.
Yeah.
In the other days, and that was always a few, but now it's just, there's more of them.
All right. Maureen, look after yourself. Keep working to pay for Christmas for all the family, my goodness. And we will pick up on more of this. And talking about the housing crisis, I'll share some more figures with you that show just the challenge at hand. And you have to say, this promise of 1.5 million homes, it looks a very, very distant pledge now. 9:45, LBC News headlines. Thomas Watts.
Focus is shifting to the next steps of the US-led peace plan for Gaza. 4 in 10 hospices in England are planning to reduce or stop end-of-life care if they can't secure more funding. Authorities have recorded a 50% increase in highly significant cyber attacks against UK businesses. LBC weather, cloudy with light rain for many places, brighter skies in central Scotland, a high of 17 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Harleyford Road in Kennington has reopened westbound. It was closed following an accident, but there are still delays back onto the A3 and also on the A23 back past the Oval. Severe delays continue on the A4 eastbound in Chiswick to the Hogarth roundabout, and that's where a van's broken down. One lane is closed, and those delays go back onto the elevated section of the M4. On the underground, on the Northern Line, Mornington Crescent Station is closed. That's because of an ongoing investigation. Also, minor delays continue on the Bakerloo line, and there are delays of about 25 minutes for Southern and Thames Link services between Norwood Junction and London Bridge.
Coming up at 10 on LBC, James O'Brien.
I'm still not entirely sure what we witnessed in Jerusalem yesterday, but that's okay, because I can just ask you.
James O'Brien on LBC.
Hey, it's me, your dishwasher. I'm sorry about the chaos last night. I think a fork got jammed in my racks. Whoops. Don't even check the bills. I've overdone it. Don't get mad, okay? But I used up lots of power yesterday. Sometimes you just have to blow off some steam.
It can feel like all your energy does is take, take, take. But the longer you're with OVO, the more rewards you get. OVO, do energy differently. Beyond customers only, eligibility required, redemption limits apply.
Call Nick Ferrari now, 0345 6060973, LBC.
It's me, again, to remind you that tonight's Euro Millions jackpot is £14 million.
Which means it's time to play the song. Again! Get in tonight's Euro Millions draw. Play on app.
Estimated jackpot. Account terms, rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
Imagine a delicious patty nestled between two buns with cheese and ketchup. It's not a burger. That patty is actually sausage, which makes this a sandwich. A breakfast sausage sandwich. The new £1.99 sausage sandwich from McDonald's. Made with RSPCA assured pork. Until 11 a.m. Price and participation may vary. Upcharges and fees apply to delivery. Subject to availability.
The world is vast, offering endless possibilities. But Claire's world has only been getting smaller. She doesn't leave the country. She barely leaves the house, still traumatised by that roadside bomb in Iraq. More than 20 years ago. For many, the battle continues. Combat Stress provides intensive mental health treatment to UK veterans with complex mental health problems, helping them rediscover the world they once knew. Combat Stress, for veterans' mental health. Search Combat Stress to support our work.
There's some naughty folks out there in cyberspace, and it can be tough to tell a legit deal from a dodgy one. That's why you need Bitdefender, your very own digital heavyweight, working silently behind the scenes to keep you and your devices safe. Whatever threats the web throws at you. Trusted by the experts, used by the pros.
Bitdefender, a global leader in cybersecurity. Trusted, always.
Verify now at bitdefender.com.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC with cybersecurity from BT, protecting businesses of all sizes against cyber threats.
Move on from housing in just a moment. Matt, coming to you for your conversation about Sports Day, but just a couple of... I'm going to give you notes and research one of my colleagues has done, but a couple of emails first. Stu says, 19 homes in London in May is pitiful. While a big issue lies in the planning and lending costs, building material costs, labour shortage and the removal of the Help to Buy scheme make schemes unviable for developers. John in Maidstone says, you ask how do you get round local opposition, talk with local residents, design suitable houses that fit in with existing designs, offer some benefit to offset the impact and pay council tax to the immediate residents who are impacted through the build. That is noise, dust and road congestion. Thank you for that. Well, there's not much going on in London. Here are the figures. Only 2,158 private housing constructions were started in London in the first 6 months of this year. That represents 4.9% of the government's target for London. 4.9. So, despite the continual promises from Sir Sadiq Khan, nothing is happening. As of October,
London is on course for just 5,000 housing starts this year. 5,000. Pitiful. There's meant to be, London is meant to contribute 400,000 of the 1.5 million. And if 2025 sees just 5,000 come in, well, as they say in the States, you can do the math. Shall we talk sports day? Matt's in Birmingham. What's happened, Matt? Good morning. Good
morning, Nick. Yeah, it's not so much sports day. So what I want to identify, my daughter, she's got ADHD, so she has a trouble, she does.
Right.
But she's brilliant. And I always encourage her, go in and do your best.
Absolutely.
Learn something new.
Absolutely.
Learn something new. So my wife took her along to hockey. So and she said the parents were very hostile.
Right.
Because my daughter, she wasn't playing as they should. She gets very distracted.
Yeah.
Their parents were shouting over the field.
So you haven't told me your daughter's age, I don't think, sir. Sorry.
She's seven.
Seven? Oh, my God.
So these kids range from 7, 8, 9, depends on the ability. My daughter, first day there, and they were just trawling her out, seeing how she was.
Yeah.
But these parents, even the kids, are very, like, aggressive, my wife was saying. The kids were, like, shouting at the other kids, saying, don't do that, do this, and that was my shot. And it's all for, you know, it reflects onto the kids. So when they say about the parents being very, like, aggressive and...
Yeah. Yeah.
Not fair play. Yeah, they are right.
So is this a hockey club or was this a school team?
No, it's a hockey club. This is a proper live hockey club. And they do championships and all that. I just thought, my daughter plays it at school in year three and she enjoys it at school. And I thought, you know what, let's get her involved in an actual club.
Yeah.
Let's just say, we're not going to send her there.
No, absolutely. Has she tried other sports, Matt?
We're going to try athletics now. So she loves running. She does.
Okay. Well, let's hope they're more supportive there. That sounds absolutely awful. What a horrible experience for the girl. I hope she goes well. Poor little thing, only seven. No point shouting a seven-year-old about hockey. Not going to get it. It's not like they're 17 trying to play rugby. That's fair enough. Let's go back to housing. Mark's in Bury St Edmunds. What do you do for a living, Mark?
Morning, Nick. I'm actually a very small property developer.
How's business?
Yeah, not too bad. We're getting there within the rules where we can.
How excited are you that the government says it's going to cut out all the obstacles, make sure you can clear the hurdles? Are you buying it, Mark?
No, not at all.
Tell me why.
Heard it all before.
Yeah.
Well, so I'll give a couple of statistics very briefly. Prior to the Conservatives getting into power, whenever it was,
15 years
ago. Small private developers accounted for roughly 45% of all house building. They now account for less than 10%. Why?
Because of the increased
paperwork. You know, I've just got planning on a building that's been empty for 12 years. It's a pub, pub in a small village outside of Ipswich.
Right.
I've got 12 pages of conditions to satisfy before I can start to do anything. Now, this is just converting an existing building. I'm not building anything new. I'm just converting an existing building to residential.
How many apartments are you going to get out of it?
Not apartments, but actually houses, because no demand for apartments in that area. So just be three houses.
Three houses.
So weren't in the local community.
What are some of the conditions in these 12 pages?
Well, one of the most common ones, which is bionet diversity. And what that covers is essentially if we've got to take down a tree, which we have, we've got to replace that plus at least 10%. So if you're doing a large site, like some larger house builders, if they take out grassland, for example, they've got to replace that somewhere.
Right.
But by 10%.
Now, you can't have 10% of a tree, can you? So what are you meant to do then?
It's a mixture of things. It could be shrubland, it could be a small tree, those kind of things. So it's basically replacing some of the items there. And then there's other little things about... you've got to have a construction management plan, which is fine. I can understand it for larger developments. But we're only converting three houses. We're not building three houses. I can understand a management plan, you know, to deal with waste and water, surface water and all that kind of thing. But we're only converting a building. And I've got another one where I'm trying to get planning on an empty plot of land, and they've refused me to build one house.
Right.
And the local planning authority. And the reason being was it's out of character with the area. Well, it's not, because the houses opposite the road, exactly in the same position as this one we want to be. So whilst they say they stick to the rules, using terms like it's out of character is just an opinion.
Default position of these, the default position is no, effectively, and you have to persuade them.
Yeah, in my experience, I'm only a small developer, so I can't talk to the large guys, but in my experience, it's hard. You know, you're trying to make a living out of building houses for people to live in, but they don't make it easy. And I think I understand, again, you know, some of these things, yes, for larger developments, you know, the consumer construction, sorry, the community instruction levy, which we all have to pay, a lot of councils, we have to pay a levy on everything that we build. I can understand that for larger developments, because, yes, you need doctor surgeries, you need schools. Building one house, why should I have to pay that then comes out of my margin? And that could be anything between 5 and 10% of the cost of building can be this construction industry levy that goes to the council and they have to spend somewhere.
Lastly, how long has it taken you to get permission for this development of the old pub?
This took me roughly 9 months, not too bad.
Is that normal? Is that par for the course? Is that quicker than usual? Norm? What would you say?
Pretty much norm for a small one. For a small one, yeah. Larger developments do take longer.
How long will it take, the refurb?
It should only take us 6 months, hopefully, but we've got to get the conditions sorted first. It's already taken us a month so far, so we've got
another. All right, maybe ready sometime next year. Mark, thanks for all the details. I hope it goes well. Good luck with the project. Chris in Stoke-on-Trent. Chris, the point you want to make. Good morning.
Yeah, good morning, Nick. Just some information that I'd like to share. A YouTube TikTok creator from, I think it's from Manchester, it's called the Around the Corner Project. Mm-hmm. And by a guy called Craig, and he's discovered some information that an American hedge fund company has bought £1.4 billion worth of new houses, in which is 4,500 brand new homes that will never be sold to British people. Now, the massive company in America...
Hang on, how do you know... How do you know they'll never be sold to British people?
Well, they're a hedge fund company, so they like buy-to-rent.
But buy-to-rent?
Buy-to-rent company, basically.
But they'll rent to British people.
They bought the houses in England.
Chris, you must let me get in a word, sir. They will rent to British people, then. They'll rent to Brits. That's fine.
Yes.
But what's the problem with that?
But they will control. They'll completely control. If you look at what they've done in America, they've pushed so many people out by just exorbitant rents. They just keep putting them up and up and up.
Sorry, I thought you said they just bought these new properties, these new homes, right?
Yes.
Well, no one's in them already.
Yes. That's right.
Well, if they're charging too much rent, no one will rent their homes, will they? Or am I missing a point here?
Well, I think it's just a bit immoral that we're selling all those houses to a foreign company when we won't have, the British people won't have a chance to buy.
Right. Unfortunately, that's the way. I think it's Blackstone is a property you're referring to. There is a report in the Daily Telegraph on this. So, I mean, it's not unusual, and in fact, a lot of American companies now are buying British properties because, sadly, the market being so sluggish, they see this as a real opportunity. So, you know, if they set the rents too high, no one will take them. Chris, you had the last word. I'm done for another day. Now, if you missed any of today's show, listen back on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app, where you can read and watch the latest from LBC, put your news categories in the order you want, pause and rewind live radio, and listen to a range of podcasts. Download the all-new official LBC app for free from your app store now. That's it for today. James O'Brien's the other side of the news on LBC. I'm with you tomorrow morning from 7. Meantime, stay safe.
Thank you, Nick. The time is approaching 10 o'clock, and to paraphrase that little spiel that we all do at the end of our shows, if you missed any of yesterday's show, you probably don't grasp quite how surreal it was. I'm not often given to insecurity, not since I started therapy anyway, but I did double-check when I came off air yesterday that I had called everything right by staying with the unfolding events in Jerusalem, even as... things took very unexpected turns. And you know you're not exaggerating when it turns out that the big summit in Sharm el-Sheikh started 4 hours late because events in Israel lasted 10 times longer, probably 20 times longer than anybody was expecting. What exactly did we witness?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, the next steps of the peace plan for Gaza remain unclear after yesterday's hostage-prisoner exchange. Donald Trump's told reporters he is focused on rebuilding the territory, declining to commit to a two-state solution. Questions over governance, security and the disarmament of Hamas remain. Cabinet Minister Steve Reeds told LBC that Britain will continue to play its part.
Now, of course, we all pay tribute to President Trump. Whatever you think of him, he did really well in this case. He secured something which has eluded others for many, many years. The hostilities have stopped. Aid is coming into Gaza. The hostages have been released. Whatever you think of the president, he's played a blinder here.
4 in 10 hospices in England are planning to reduce or stop end-of-life care if they can't secure more funding in the next 6 months. Figures shared with LBC by the Liberal Democrats show more than 12,000 terminally ill patients could be affected. Charlie King from Hospice UK says the system is under huge strain.
We're seeing a lot of closure of hospice beds, and we're also seeing cutbacks of the number of visits that hospices make to patients who are at home. And the thing is, this is not only bad for patients and families, it's bad for the NHS as well. More patients will be taking up beds in hospitals, and we know all the pressures that we have in our hospital system.
The Department of Health says it's investing a record £100 million in improving hospice facilities. The government is urging the UK's leading company bosses to take immediate action on cyber protection. The National Cyber Security Centre saw a record number of serious attacks in the last year, driven by Chinese and Russian hackers. Marks & Spencer, the Co-op and Jaguar Land Rover have been among the targets. The Shadow Minister, Alex Burkhardt, says the update serves as a reminder.
It shows the importance first of making sure that our national cyber defences are up to scratch, but also to send out a very strong message to anyone who is engaged in this sort of activity that the British state will hold them to account.
Tens of thousands of homes now need repairs because of botched external wall insulation. The National Audit Office has found almost all properties to which it was fitted under a government scheme need remedial work. There are concerns it could lead to damp and mould. Figures show earnings growth has eased again and unemployment is up. The main jobless rate rose to 4.8% in the 3 months to August. That's its highest level in more than 4 years. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was at 94.13, down 28. The pound buys $1.32 and a euro 14. LBC weather, cloudy today with light rain for many places. Central Scotland, a bit brighter. A high of 17 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watts.
Some companies try to reel people in by promising quick cash if you pay them to claim work expenses. But think twice before taking the bait, because they might just want to land a commission, and it turns out you aren't eligible to claim anything. You'll have to pay HMRC back, and it's unlikely the company will refund any fees. So don't get caught out. Check if you're eligible and make a claim with HMRC for free online. Just search Don't Get Caught Out.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Good morning. It's 3 minutes after ten, and well, this hasn't really happened to me before. Yesterday's show was unprecedented in many ways, and you've heard me say many times I'm not sure what I think about something, or I need you to explain things to me, and it's always been true. Some mornings, if I'm completely honest with you, it may have been a consequence of laziness rather than genuine confusion, but it's more fun when you're ringing to school me than it is when you're tuning in to be schooled. So yesterday I came on air at 10 o'clock, about an hour after events in Jerusalem were due to have begun, and the information we had was that Donald Trump would start talking at about 9 a.m. I give or take a brief introduction or a little bit of ceremony and possibly even some pomp. And by 10 a.m. when I came on air, things were already an hour late. I'm still, was it about 11:30 by the time events at, no, but I've got to, I'm still confused. You can tell from the fact that I just garbled incomprehensibly. It started at 10:56, at which point the speaker, the speaker spoke first, didn't he, at about 10:27? And then Netanyahu started speaking at about 11:25.
It actually started at... that can't be right. 10:56 was the start, but the speaker started speaking at 10:27. Even the numbers that are being put in front of me don't make any arithmetical sense, do they? But Trump then started speaking and carried on speaking until long after my show had ended. So for the first time ever, I found myself opening a show with a speech that was an hour late and ending it before the speech had finished. I've never known anything like it. And I sat here, having opened yesterday's show with the intention of having a phone in about whether or not... Oh, we did do an hour on that, didn't we? God, my memory's like Swiss cheese. On whether or not there was any better available option than the one that Donald Trump had kind of imposed upon or compelled Benjamin Netanyahu to sign up for while Arab countries were bringing similar pressure to bear upon Hamas, albeit that they had signed up for something more or less identical a year ago. The feeling I had during that sort of extraordinarily triumphalist session in Parliament, underpinned, of course, by the fact that the Speaker had instructed everybody present that even a single squeak of dissent or disagreement would result in removal from the chamber. That, I think, was the first point at which I found myself thinking, pardon? I mean, the idea that everybody in the Knesset, let alone Israel, is united behind Benjamin Netanyahu is completely at odds with the observable facts. But that was the first inkling you got that we were watching something very carefully choreographed, even though it had been set up at quite short notice. And then we embarked upon this extraordinary round of congratulation and triumphalism without a single mention. And I'm always a little bit impatient with people who say to me, why are you talking about this and not talking about that? Because you can't talk about all of the things all of the time. And, you know, we have to make priorities. We have to take priorities. But it was notable that the mention of the casualties and deaths in Gaza was notable entirely by its absence. And I understand up to a point why that would be. But if you were celebrating a peace, you would arguably acknowledge the existence of two sides in the suffering and indeed two sides in the settlement. But it definitely wasn't that kind of event. It was an extraordinary round of, to my mind, and this is where you may want to correct me, attempts to rewrite history. And it began to look, and a couple of you suggested this to me, and I am going to conclude this introduction, although I don't think it'll be as long as Donald Trump's monologue yesterday, by asking you what you think was going on, what you think happened. And there's two parts to it. There's the Trump speech, and then there's the Knesset activity, including the speeches by Benjamin Netanyahu and the leader of the opposition, to whom it fell to embark upon the perhaps most full-throated attempt at genocide denial. And then there's Trump's speech, which was not at all. The more you listened to it, and this is why I come to you today still with a sense of, not bafflement at least, but without a very neat explanation of what happened, and that could well prove to be because there isn't one. Trump said a lot of things that would not have gone down well in that room. Notably the bit where he told Benjamin Netanyahu that he couldn't just carry on doing kill, 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 which is something of a refutation of everything that had gone before in the Israeli attempts to typify what had actually happened in Gaza. Everybody honest knows it was kill, kill, kill. But Donald Trump actually said it in the Knesset. And then you have one of those extraordinary pendulum swinging moments where you go, what did he just do? So he sort of absorbed the extraordinary sycophancy. But I think underneath the sycophancy,